Good afternoon, everyone. This afternoon's agenda item is herring. So I will turn the floor over for the Doug and Lori show.
Is this on?
Good.
I don't have a light, so I can't tell. Anyway, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Under tab 5, you'll find documents related to our decision today. Our primary objectives today are to select some final measures for Framework Adjustment 2 to the herring FMP, and to select final measures for the 2013 to 2015 Atlantic herring fishing specifications. There's a variety of documents in your binder, including the specifications and document in Framework 2. Also an advisory panel report, a couple of SSC reports, and plan development team reports. There's also a correspondence from the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries regarding the herring specifications here. Just to let everybody know, because of some illnesses on the PDT, the herring committee did not have an opportunity to meet and make recommendations, develop some recommendations on the framework or the specifications package. The AP did meet and did provide us with some recommendations on some of those alternatives. As a result, we're meeting as a committee of the whole right now, and there are no committee motions, but I have developed a series of motions to get the discussion started on this that are based primarily around some of the recommendations from the advisory panel. At this point, what I'd like to do is go to Lori. She'll have a presentation on the framework and the specifications. I think it also will include in here some of the AP recommendations. And after we get any questions on that, then I'll be in a position, Mr. Chairman, to start some motions here. So, Lori, if you'd like to start.
Okay, thank you. my copies of my presentation slides should be available around the table as well as outside for the audience. And we're going to be working primarily off of the large document, which I believe is document number 1, the draft framework 2 and specs document. So when I reference pages and section numbers, it'll be out of the larger document. Just to give you a quick overview of where we are in the timeline for this action, we're towards the end of it. We started the specifications process with the benchmark stock assessment last June and have had a series of meetings since then. The initial meeting for the council was the September council meeting, where we made some decisions regarding allowable biological catch based on the SSC advice from September. if you recall, we came back in November to the council and considered a couple of additional alternatives related to ABC and also discussed the accountability measures. It was at the November council meeting where, we initiated Framework 2, which authorizes the council to split quotas by season as well as to implement some carryover provisions. We'll go through those in a few minutes. So the November council meeting was the initial meeting on Framework 2, and then today's council meeting will hopefully be the final Framework 2 meeting as well as the final specifications meeting. Assuming the decisions are made today, We will get both of these actions submitted and implemented as soon as possible. Framework 2, I'm going to go over first. Framework 2 and the specifications are one document, but two separate actions. Framework 2 is totally a policy framework. There are no numbers in the framework. The framework includes the provisions to establish policy for the specifications. And there are two issues in Framework 2. There are alternatives to allow seasonal sub-ACL quota splitting and up to 10% sub-ACL carryover as part of the specifications process. So all that the framework would do is authorize these things to happen in the specs process. The framework establishes the general policy, and then within each specs package, the numbers for those particular years would be analyzed. At the advisors meeting in January, the advisory panel members in attendance generally supported the action in Framework 2, the action being the alternatives that would allow seasonal splitting as well as carryover. There's some varying of opinion in terms of which options for the carryover provisions, but for the most part, I believe the advisors generally supported option one or three. You can go back and look at the advisor's report. In terms of this specifications package, which is 2013-15, the framework timing-wise would not be implemented until it could apply to the 2000. It would not apply to the 2013 fishing year. It would apply starting in 2014 forward. And with the way the with the way the 2013-15 specs are structured, 2014 and 15 will kind of be a transition year with the framework measures and carryovers and accountability measures. It's unlikely that even if we authorize carryovers in Framework 2 that we're going to be able to do any carryovers in the 13-15 specs. I'm not 100% sure it won't happen, but we already have an overage in 2012 that needs to be dealt with, and also in 2015 the ABC and the OFL are set equal to each other, so there's not a lot of potential opportunity for carryover given overage issues and everything else. However, as I mentioned before, the framework is a policy framework, so we are setting this policy for now into the future. It's not just for the 2013-15 specs. Regarding the sub-ACL splitting, it would be by month as proposed in whatever specs package at that time. Alternative one is to not allow it, and alternative two is to allow it. Under alternative one, we already allow splitting in Area 1A through Framework 1, but Framework 1 was very specific, and Framework 1 only authorized an Area 1A split January to May, June through December. So what we're doing in Alternative 2 is we're authorizing monthly splitting of all of the quotas under any seasons that we feel we want to take a look at in the specs package. Regarding carryover provisions, Alternative 1 is to not allow carryovers, and Alternative 2 is to allow carryovers up to 10% of a sub-ACL from one fishing year to the next. There are three options described in the document, so if alternative two is selected, one of the options needs to be selected. Under option one, the carryover would increase the corresponding sub-ACL, but would not change the total ACL. So carryover would be allowed, and the sub-ACLs for the various management areas could increase in the following year, but the total ACL across all of the management areas would remain unchanged, and the accountability measures would apply to both the total ACL and the sub-ACLs. So even though you would allow for more fishing in one or more of the management areas, the total fishery would still be limited by the total ACL. Under option two, The NIMS regional administrator would be authorized to allow carryovers up to 10% in any year. And the regional administrator would do so on a year-to-year basis by evaluating what's going on in the fishery, what the quotas are looking like, where we are with ACL, sub-ACL monitoring, what management uncertainty was specified at, and all of the things that may factor into whether or not carryovers should be authorized. And essentially, the regional administrator could just determine on an annual basis whether or not up to 10% of any unused sub-ACL could be carried over. Under option three, the council would analyze carryovers as part of the specifications process. And if carryovers occurred under option three, they would apply to both the sub-ACL and would increase the stock-wide ACL. So in this case, any increases in the stock-wide ACL would have to be analyzed up front in the specifications package. The stock-wide ACL could never exceed ABC. The difference between ABC and the ACL is management uncertainty. So under option three, the council would consider carryovers and the potential for carryovers when it specifies management uncertainty. There are very subtle differences between option two and option three. Option two essentially allows the regional administrator to make the decisions, and option three relies on more analysis and more upfront decision making in the specs process by the council. Under any of the options, all of the accountability measures would continue to apply to both the sub-ACLs and the stock-wide. The carryovers would be up to 10% based on the initial allocations for that fishing year, so it wouldn't be based on overage deductions that may occur as well, or it gets complicated. Carryovers are only allowed in management areas if the total ACL is not exceeded for that year. So, for example, last year is the first year that we've had the total ACL exceeded. So in that case, carryovers would not have been allowed even for unutilized sub-ACL in this year. And then any of these provisions could be modified in the future through the specifications process when carryovers are contemplated. And this slide makes note of what I just mentioned, which is under options two and three, the specification of management uncertainty as we move forward may need to consider the carryovers. Under option one, the stock-wide ACL does not change, but under options two or three, because the carryover may increase the stock-wide ACL, that factors into how you specify management uncertainty. So that's really it for framework two. It's all general policy, no numbers. So for today, when we get through to the motions, we need to select preferred alternatives for the framework. We need a preferred alternative for the sub-ACL splitting, and we need a preferred alternative for the carryovers with an option if the carryover alternative is selected. So moving into the specifications, the specifications are a little more complicated. And we're talking about the 13 to 15 fishery specifications. The flow chart that I've put on the screen here is sort of a way to illustrate the decision process that we've gone through for the herring specifications. Things are a little complicated this year because of the need to address accountability measures, which is not usually part of our specifications process. And if you recall, we took a couple cracks at ABC. So, we started, if you just follow this decision tree, starting with the assessment and the SSC, looking at OFL and ABC, we have the alternatives that the council originally approved, the two additional alternatives here, all of the evaluation and analysis that led to the preferred alternative for ABC. When you have your preferred alternative for ABC, that's where all of the sub-ACL options come from. So we're working off of alternative 2 for ABC, which the council already voted on, and now we're looking at 6 sub-ACL options. Over here, we have our accountability measure alternatives again, and we'll have a final action for the accountability measures. So this kind of just shows you how many different points decisions have been made by the council and information has been either reviewed or analyzed by the SSC or the PDT. Very quickly, just to go over herring stock status from the assessment, the stock is not overfished and is actually considered to be rebuilt, more than rebuilt, well above the biomass target. Current biomass, 517,000. Our target is 157,000. Current fishing mortality is 0.14. FMSY 0.27. So we're at about half of that, and we're not overfished, rebuilt, and not overfishing. So, as I mentioned, the council did approve alternative 2 for OFL and ABC, which is the constant catch alternative. ABC would be specified for the 3 years at 114,000. Minus management uncertainty leaves you a stock-wide ACL of 107.8. So that's the number that we're looking at to break down into the management areas. The total is 107.8. As you recall, the SSC did review 2 additional alternatives for ABC control rules as requested by the council. The SSC report is in the binder. The SSC at the November meeting confirmed its previous ABC recommendations for the 2013-15 specifications. That was sort of the short-term advice from the SSC. Long-term advice supported the Herring PDT recommendation that these alternatives, as well as other ABC alternatives, should be further considered in a long-term action that considers long-term management strategy for the herring fishery. So, again, we are working from 107.8, and we are going to break that up into the management area sub-ACLs. As most of you know, we have one stock complex and one total ACL, but we recognize that we have different stock components that mix seasonally. We generally refer to an inshore component and an offshore component. The inshore component spawns in the inshore Gulf of Maine, and the inshore component is also caught in the Canadian New Brunswick weir fishery. We assume that all of the catch from the Canadian New Brunswick weir fishery comes from the inshore component. So we take the total ACL and break it up into sub-ACLs in these 4 management areas, 1A, 1B, 2, and 3. And as part of this package, since the council did agree to develop the framework to allow seasonal splitting, we are considering seasonal splits, which would apply to all of the options, except for no action, of course. And the splits that we're considering are for Area 1A, only allowing fishing from June through December. In Area 1B, only allowing fishing from May through December, and then splitting Area 2, two-thirds January, February, and one-third March to December. That was proposed as an attempt to try to ensure that enough of the Area 2 quota is available for the later part of the mackerel fishery, which is generally a winter fishery. We talked about this with the advisors last week. Or 2 weeks ago, there was little support from the advisors for these splits. Everybody generally supported allowing splitting as part of Framework 2, but in terms of these particular splits, there was not a lot of support from the AP members at the meeting. The general feedback I've received from some of the AP members and some of the industry folks is that if the quota is increased in Area 2, there may not need to be a split. There may not be a need to split it if there's enough quota available for the mackerel season. I'm sure that's something that some of the industry folks can speak to. So here's your no action option, which is option one. And this would maintain the 2012 specifications for 2013 through 15, not including any overage deductions. And then, starting on page 18 of the document, we look at our other options. We have options 2 through 6. Excuse me. Option 2, we are moving from a total ACL of $91,200 to $107,800. So we're essentially allocating an additional $16,600. I think I did the math right. $16,600 to the fishery. Option 2 takes the additional $16,600 and distributes it equally among the four management areas. And essentially keeps the same proportions that we have right now. And then the rest of the options are slight variations. Option 3 is on page 19. Option 3 redistributes the catch just to areas 1A, 1B, and 2. Option 4, again, another slight variation. Option 4 allocates an additional $10,000 to area 2 based on what we've heard about the needs of the mackerel fishery, and then distributes the rest of the catch in 1A and 1B. Option 5 is a variation of option 4, recognizing that we're going to get the specs implemented late in 2013 and miss the mackerel fishery this year. So option 4 takes some of the catch that we would have allocated to Area 2 in 2013 and puts it into 1B in 2013 just to provide opportunity later in the year for Area 1B. And then 2014 and 15 are identical to option 4. And that's just because, you know, best case scenario, I think we're going to have these specs implemented summertime. So there won't, the needs in Area 2 are, is January through April. So this is really just an opportunity, or this is an attempt to provide an opportunity to fully utilize the quota in 2013, or to come closer to fully utilizing it. And then option 6 is a little bit different. Option 6 actually reallocates fish from Area 3, drops the Area 3 quota, and puts that fish into Area 2, and then reallocates the additional yield to most of it to Areas 1A and 1B. Before I go there, under all 6 of these options, you essentially have option 1 being no action and option 6 being the other end to bound the range, essentially, because option 6 has the highest quota in 1A and the lowest in 3. So everything else sort of falls in the middle. 2 through 5 are sort of all in the middle. When we discussed this with the herring advisors on January 16th, the advisors actually developed a hybrid option, which is similar to option 2. It's a little bit different. It's kind of between options 2 and 4, if you're looking at it, but this is what the advisory panel supported. There is definitely concern from some of the advisors about increasing effort too much in the inshore areas. So the advisors supported this option more because some of the fish are reallocated to Area 3 and provide more opportunity for offshore fishing. One more thing before I go on. I think this is in another slide, but I should have mentioned it. In all of these options, originally the council, when we talked about this last year, had proposed no research set-asides, and that's because we haven't had research set-asides from 2010 to 12 either, and because the quotas have been so low, the set-asides just haven't provided enough funding to support research projects. The advisors, based on information, if you look in the binder materials, there's a letter from Mass Division of Marine Fisheries asking the Council to reconsider its position on research set-asides and support a research set-aside that may be able to help fund the Mass DMF, S-MAST, River Herring Bycatch Avoidance Program, and the portside sampling that goes along with that. So the advisors did support that, and so the advisors are recommending that 3% of each sub-HCL be set aside for a research set-aside. Other specifications, these are in the document. These are all consistent with the last round and really have no impact. Domestic annual harvest, domestic annual processing, border transfer, U.S. at sea processing, all proposed to remain the same. These are mostly formulaic. Border transfer is not an allocation. It is just a maximum, and it's never been reached. But we do provide that to facilitate the transport of herring between the U.S. and Canada. Okay, research set-asides, as I mentioned, our initial proposal was 0%. Take a look at the correspondence from Mass DMF. And the advisors, based on that and based on some further discussions, do support a 3% RSA. Fixed gear set aside proposed to be maintained where it is at 295 metric tons. There hasn't really been any support for changing it, and the advisors generally supported that. Okay, accountability measures. This is starting on page 26 of the document. We are revisiting the accountability measures for the herring fishery consistent with the court order on the Amendment 4 lawsuit, as well as the letter from NIMS dated August 31st to consider a range of alternatives to modify current accountability measures. So if you recall, when we discussed this in November, what we did is we reconsidered all of the alternatives that we had developed in Amendment 4, and we also added some new alternatives. Following the November Council meeting, I sat down and worked through all of the accountability measures and put together packages, which are the alternatives that you're looking at now. They address the two current accountability measures that we have. The first one is the percent closure, the percent trigger for closing the directed fishery. And the second accountability measure is the overage payback. So those are the two accountability measures that we need to revisit and address. The current accountability measure for the haddock catch cap is not affected by any of this. That's just going to stay in place, and we're not going to make any adjustments to it. And that essentially closes the directed herring fishery when the haddock catch cap is reached in a particular stock area. So alternative one, as I mentioned, our current two accountability measures. The directed fishery in an area closes when 95% of the sub-ACL is projected to be reached, not including any research set-asides. So if we had a 3% research set-aside, that would be 92%. The additional 5% is provided to account for incidental catch under a 2,000-pound trip limit. And under the no-action alternative, this does not apply to the stock-wide ACL. Right now, we do not have a percent trigger for closing the directed fishery that applies to the stock-wide ACL. And that's something that we need to think about with this round. The second, overage payback, does apply to both the total stock-wide ACL as well as the sub-ACLs. And as you may recall, right now we base our overage deductions on year-end catch totals, which take a lot of time. We generally don't get the year-end catch totals from NIMS until well into the next year, so there's a one-year lag, which means 2012 overages are deducted from 2014. So that's the current. Those are the current process. That's the current accountability measures under the no action alternative. So alternative two, on page 28, would first change the first accountability measure from 95% to 92%, and would establish a trigger for the stock-wide ACL. So the first option is that the trigger for the stock-wide ACL would be 95%, that should not say remain, it should be would be 95%, and the trigger for the sub-ACLs would be 92%. Under option B, the trigger for both the stock-wide ACL and the sub-ACLs would be 92%. And then, in terms of the overage deduction, in this alternative, we would switch from using year-end tallying to in-season monitoring, which means we would use NMSA's quota monitoring, the same methods that they use to determine when the sub-ACLs have been reached and close the directed fishery. We would use that method to determine overages and then apply them immediately in the following fishing year. So we would essentially, draw a line in the sand, whether it's December 31st or January 10th or whatever, and from that point, you know, we'll look at the catch reports that have come in and what NMSA's quota monitoring totals are, and those become the numbers that you base your overage deductions and your carryovers on. So two big changes in this alternative. You're going from 95% to 92% and implementing a stock-wide trigger. And you're going from year-end tallying to in-season tallying, and you're losing the one-year lag. There is an analysis in the document that compares year-end tallying to in-season tallying, so you can see the differences. NMSA has been making changes to their quota monitoring methods all along, so we're getting closer and closer in terms of being able to get the two to match. But year-end tallying always includes VTR reports, late submissions that you're not going to be able to avoid. At the bottom of the slide, you'll see there is also an option that can be added to this alternative, which would allow NMSA to prohibit the possession of herring if 100% of a sub-ACL or ACL is projected to be reached. Just completely prohibit the possession. That gets rid of the 2,000-pound possession limit. This option does not appear in the future slides that I'm about to show you, but this option applies to all of the alternatives for accountability measures. So when you vote on your alternative for accountability measures, keep in mind that we should consider whether or not you want to include the provision to allow NMSA to prohibit possession at 100%. So alternative three is different. That one is on page 30 of the document. Alternative 3 would maintain the 95% trigger, but it would include provisions to reduce that trigger to 92%, and the trigger would be reduced to 92% when the stock is overfished and overfishing is occurring, and there's been an overage in one of the preceding 2 years. So if those two conditions are met for an area, the trigger would go down to 92%. This alternative would maintain the current process for overage deductions, which means year-end catch tallying with the one-year lag, except that the overage deductions, if the overage is 5% or less, if a sub-ACL overage is 5% or less, the deduction would not be required unless the deduction would not be required when overfishing is not occurring and the stock is rebuilt unless the stock-wide ACL is exceeded. Try to wrap your brain around that one, because I'm still trying to. If you have an overage that's 5% or less and overfishing is not occurring and the stock is rebuilt, which is the current condition that we're in with our stock, then you would not need to take the deduction unless you exceeded the total stock-wide ACL. So using 2012 as an example, the stock is rebuilt, overfishing is not occurring, and we had overages of 5% or less in some of the management areas, but we exceeded the stock-wide ACL, so all of the overage deductions would be required. There may be instances in the future where they wouldn't, and these provisions just allow for smaller sub-ACL overage deductions to not be required under certain conditions. Alternative 4 takes a little bit different approach. Alternative 4 bases the trigger on closing the directed fishery in an area. It bases it on what what the overage may have been in the area in the previous year. So every area starts at 95%, but if you exceed sub-ACL by 4%, then the following year, the trigger would be reduced to 91%. So the trigger is reduced by the amount, the percentage of the overage. There's an option to apply this to both the stock-wide and the sub-ACLs. And then regarding the overage paybacks, same provisions as alternative three, the ones that I just explained on the previous slide. So those are the four alternatives for accountability measures. I'm going to go through a little bit of the impact analysis, and I'm going to try to go through it as quickly as possible. I did not include a ton of the impact analysis for the accountability measures in the presentation, but there's some extensive discussion about fishery impacts related to the various alternatives in the document. So in terms of impacts, the first thing to do is look at overall for the stock complex as a whole, what's the impact of the OFL and ABC for the next 3 years. So this is right out of the document. We've got projections for the next 3 years of what F and SSB would be under the proposed OFL-ABC. And if you recall, the constant catch approach is set up so that in 2015, ABC is set at a value that gives you a 50% or a 50% probability that you're above FMSY, which is overfishing. However, the stock remains rebuilt well over the biomass target, and there is a 0% probability of becoming overfished. Under the constant catch approach, what you see is that you are foregoing catch in earlier years to allow for the catch in the later year. And if you recall from previous discussions, this approach, because more of the catch is foregone in the earlier years, may be more beneficial or more conservative to the uncertainty associated with the 2008 year class. The 2008 year class is moving through the fishery now. So this constant catch approach takes a little bit more conservative approach in 2013 and 14 to allow for that catch in 2015. Overall, again, we're talking about increasing the catch in this fishery by about 16,000 tons, so there is a benefit to the fishery participants. And as we talked about earlier, at a previous meeting, the constant catch approach may allow for better business planning because we're giving a steady quota for 3 years rather than varying the quota year to year. Okay, so then the next component of the analysis that everybody is always very eager to talk about is the model that we use to analyze the sub-ACL options and compare the options to each other. I'm going to try to explain this as easy as possible. We have an inshore component and an offshore component, and we know they mix, but we don't have assessments for either of the stock components, so we don't know for sure, what the biomass of either stock component may be relative to the total, and we don't know for sure whether the same reference points apply. But generally, for comparative purposes, we're going to use the reference points for the stock complex as a basis for comparison when we're looking at the two stock components. So what we've done in the analysis is we've taken each of these options, we've taken our current biomass, all of the information from the assessment, and you take your options that distribute the catch in the four management areas, and you know that the inshore and offshore components swim around in these management areas and mix seasonally. So when you catch the fish seasonally in the various areas, you're catching some inshore fish and some offshore fish. And so you have to apply a bunch of assumptions to basically determine under each of these options how much inshore fish you're taking and how much offshore fish you're taking. And then you can take your removals that you've simulated and you put them over the biomass that you've simulated, and you get a relative exploitation rate. And then for the inshore component and for the offshore component, and then you can compare those to the FMSY exploitation rate for the whole stock, which is our OFL. So the things that we put into this model, number one, what do we know about the population mixing rate, which is how much is inshore and how much is offshore? What's the inshore-offshore component mix? It's variable. It's all over the place. So what we did is we updated the information that we have. We used, there's three sources of information. We were able to update one of them this time around. The other two sources are very old. And the updated information that we have suggests that it's a variable mix. But the average over the time series is 50-50. What we did is we used the whole range of observed data that we have, and we drew from a uniform distribution of that range for the model. So the model runs 10,000 times, so we put in the range of observations that we have, and every time the model runs, it picks one of those numbers. The average over 10,000, 50-50, which is consistent with the information that we have. The mixing rate in Area 1A is one of the big questions and one of the uncertainties. When you're catching fish in the summertime in Area 1A, how much is inshore, how much is offshore? We have variable information there, so we have a pretty wide range here, 0.2 to 0.8, 20% or 80%. So again, when we do the model, draw from a uniform distribution in that range. The catch by month and area, as I mentioned, depending on where you are and when you're fishing, you're catching inshore versus offshore fish. So we updated this time series, and we drew from these years, 2000 to 2011. So every time the model runs, picks one of those years and applies the catch by month from that year. Fourth one is the New Brunswick weir fishery catch, widely variable. 2011 or one of those years, extremely low, one year extremely high, 30,000 or something like that. So again, put all of these years and then the model draws one of those years. And with the New Brunswick weir catch, all of that fish is assumed to be from the inshore stock component. So take it right off the top. But that's how the model works. These are all the inputs, and the model runs 10,000 times, and we just draw from the range of observed data that we have. Then you take the 10,000 runs, you add them up, and you get your averages, and then that's how you get your simulated removals from the inshore component and the offshore component, which you then compare to the total stock. And there it is in a nice little flow chart. Hopefully this is helpful, but, you know, this is essentially how the analysis works. You know, you get your biomass, you project your OFL, you have an OFL-FMSY ratio here, you get your options here, you throw in all of your data, and you get your removals, do it 10,000 times, you compare the ratios. Now, if you recall, in 2015, the OFL that we have and the ABC that we have gives you a 50% probability in 2015 that you're going to be above FMSY. So that's 0.5. So in 2015, you're starting at 0.5 for the stock complex as a whole. So when you look in the analysis, in the document, you're going to see tables like this with even more columns. I actually deleted some of the columns here. Because really what you want to look at is for each of the options and each of the years, here's your OFL to biomass ratio. This is the ratio for your total stock complex, 0.14, 0.13, 0.12. And these are the mean ratios that are coming out of the analysis for the inshore, and these are the max. Here is the probability that you're going to exceed that ratio. Now, as I mentioned, the probability for the entire stock complex is 0.5. So you really want to look here at options that are going to put you above 0.5 for either the inshore or the offshore. So when you get to page 157 of the document, this is sort of the take-home results here. What we've done is we've pulled, this is only 2015, and 2015 is the only year that you run into problems, and that's because we already start at a 0.5. We're already starting at a 50% probability of overfishing. There's no, you don't run into any problems in 2014 or 13, but in 2015, you're going to run into some options that are going to give you something at 0.5 or above. So what we've done is we've taken each of the options for 2015 and we've put the inshore probability next to the offshore probability here for each of the options, and it gives you your range. And you can see here that option 2 gives you the most favorable outcome for the inshore component, and option 6 gives you the most favorable outcome for the offshore component, and options 3, 4, and 5 fall in between. But if you look at the numbers for options 3, 4, and 5, they're identical. Inshore, option 3, 4, 5, 0.5, 2.5, 2.52. Offshore, 3, 4, and 5, 0.6, 0.61, 0.61. So essentially, what this analysis is telling you is that option 2 is going to be the most favorable for the inshore component, option 6 the most favorable for the offshore component. Everything else is going to fall in the middle, and the impacts of any of the shifts between options 2 and option 6 are not going to be discernible. You're going to end up somewhere right around where you are for 3, 4, and 5. So what you conclude from that is that you're looking at an allocation decision right now. You have 16,000 tons of fish that need to be allocated among the areas. You don't want to put that fish all in one area, because then you will have a differential impact on one of the stock components, or you may. But none of the options do that. So right now, the analysis doesn't indicate that there's a significant difference in the impacts on either the inshore or the offshore. Some of them may impact one more than the other, but there's not like a major... we're not seeing huge difference where we see like a 0.8 or a 0.9 or something like that on one of the stock components. As I mentioned, the probability of exceeding the ratio for the total complex, the total complex is 0.5. So results around 0.5 are kind of expected for each stock component in 2015. I mean, it actually, when you look at the results, one thing you conclude is that the model did pretty good in terms of being consistent with what you would expect when you compare it to the stock complex. And based on that, you're looking at an allocation decision. The decisions that you make on where to put those fish are not going to be driven largely by biological impacts, recognizing that impacts are important, and they're going to impact both stock components. The point here is that they're going to impact both stock components. So that's the biological end of it. Looking at the allocation decisions, the fishery impacts are very important. And I'm kind of glossing over them just in the interest of time, but there's a lot more information in the document. Option 2, in terms of perceptions and equitability, may be perceived as the most fair because it takes the additional yield and allocates it equally across all of the management areas. However, you know, as we developed these options, there were needs that were expressed by certain sectors of the fishery. A lot of concern about the Area 2 fishery and the mackerel fishery participants. Options 4 and 5, may likely benefit those participants the most. And option 6, because option 6 shifts fish from Area 3 inshore, option 6 actually increases inshore opportunities the most. Regarding the accountability measures, there's a lot that can be said about the accountability measures. In general, we looked at primarily the impacts of lowering the trigger to 92%. There are obviously impacts from closing the directed fishery earlier, but the point of the accountability measures is to avoid overages. And the negative impacts of overages and overage deductions. So, you know, any short-term impacts there from lowering the trigger would be offset by the longer-term benefits of managing the fishery in a more timely manner and not having these overages. So that is it pretty much in a nutshell, as quickly as I could cover it. I'm happy to answer any questions. What we need to do today is select our set ACL option, make a decision on splitting, approve the other fishery specifications, approve the set-asides, pick a preferred alternative for accountability measures, and finish the specs. Thank you.
John Bullard.
Lori, that was a great presentation. Back to the table on the page 157, where you compared the inshore and offshore in 2015. And you said that that table showed that option two favors the inshore component over option six and favors the offshore option six is favored. But it looks to me that option two in the inshore is substantially different than option six, but really not very different at all between the two in offshore. Am I reading that right? I mean, that there's a big difference between option two and option six when you're looking at inshore, but not much difference at all in when you're looking offshore.
Yes.
If that were true, would that mean looking at this table that option two would really be on the merits favored?
Well, I mean, again, this all gets to how you allocate the fish among the areas, because you catch, this is where things get really complicated. Area three is all assumed to be offshore fish. So the higher or lower that you make the area three quota, you're directly impacting the offshore component. So if you look at option two versus option six, the numbers, area three in option two is proposed to be 45,300, and area three in option six is proposed to be 30,000. So that's a huge difference, but you don't see as much difference in terms of the numbers, because when you look at the 1A quotas in option six, the 1A quota goes up a lot. It goes up to 40,000. So what you're offsetting, you catch offshore fish when you fish in 1A. So some of that reduction in area three comes back in area 1A, and that's how you, it's so complicated, but that's how you end up with almost similar ratios in those two areas. The reason that option two is so low, or relatively speaking, in area 1A is because the reason that it's relatively so low for the inshore component is because of the increase in the area three fishery. It's very difficult to answer your question specifically, but what those numbers are telling you is that under option two, you have a 36% chance of overfishing or exceeding that overfishing ratio versus the 52% in the offshore and then the 63% under option six versus 50%. So basically what you're doing is you're just increasing the likelihood of hitting the overfishing ratio. It's not necessarily that you are having an impact on the biomass of that stock. I don't know if that was helpful.
Crystal clear. I'm certainly glad I asked the
question. David Pierce and David Gaethel.
Fine job, Lori, despite your being ill for 2 months. Just a couple of questions. I think you said in your presentation, and this is with reference to page 7 of your PowerPoint presentation, I think you said that regarding the sub-ACL seasonal splits, that industry was not supportive. Well, yeah, it says right here, little support from the AP members for the 2014 and 15 splits. I'm not clear exactly what that means. I thought that industry was supportive of the Area 1A splits and somewhat supportive of 1B, not so much Area 2. Would you clarify what the industry has said regarding their positions on those splits?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, there's general support for the 1A split. The 1A split has been in effect for many years through the ASMFC landing restrictions by default. So that's almost, I think, everybody sort of just universally has accepted that. In terms of the other splits, there was not much support, and I would put 1B and 2 in that category. The 1B split, I'm trying to remember why that was proposed. You know, we had problems in 1B because of overage deductions. The quota was so low. It got caught very early last year. I believe by February it was already caught. So part of that may have been an effort to just delay that fishery to later in the year. Not really sure, but there was not a lot of support for that. And then very little support for the Area 2 split, which was a little bit surprising because it was, you know, suggested by the industry. But I think that originally the Area 2 split was proposed as a way, again, to try to spread that quota out for the rest of the mackerel fishery. And then it was recognized that in this round of specifications, we're going to be increasing the quota. And most of the participants who I've spoken to and who spoke at the advisory panel meeting indicated, and we've heard this in the past, that 10,000 tons in Area 2 would do the trick from where we are now. If you put 10,000 tons in Area 2, there wouldn't be a problem with the mackerel fishery. That would leave enough for the whole fishery, and then possibly even in December, if fish show up in December, there would still be quota left over. So the industry kind of came back around and said or the folks who I talked to said that if the quota increases that much, then there wouldn't be a need for a split, and the industry would much prefer to just get the fish when they're available and not have to potentially stop the fishery in February to wait for the beginning of March if things were proceeding okay. So the general consensus from the folks I've spoken to is if there's enough fish in Area 2, there isn't a need for a split.
Okay, thank you. And then my second question, last question, is on page 17 of your presentation, under fisheries impacts for the sub-ACL specs, you provide some estimated impacts for option 2, 4, 5, and 2. I noticed that there isn't any comment regarding the hybrid option, option 6, which is the one offered up by the advisory panel. Did you have anything, any analysis that would shed any light on the impacts of 6?
Of the hybrid option? No, I mean, we haven't. The hybrid option hasn't been analyzed because it was developed at the advisors meeting and, you know, wasn't in the document, but you know, in terms of fishery impacts, haven't looked at it, and need to look at it in terms of where it falls between these other options. The hybrid is generally somewhere in between options 2 and 4. That's kind of what I've been able to figure out in terms of how the fish are allocated. And my expectation from the perspective of running it through the sub-ACL analysis, my expectation is that the hybrid option would result in, it would bring up the inshore 0.36 probably a little bit, and it would bring the offshore 0.61 a little bit down. So, you know, you'd probably end up around the 0.4-ish something and 0.5-ish something. But bottom line is that it falls, again, I mean, if you look at 3, 4, and 5 on here, there's no detectable difference between 3, 4, and 5. So, you know, either way, you're somewhere around there. The fishery impacts, if the hybrid option is selected, would have to be evaluated compared to the other options here. But, again, when you look at the hybrid compared to option 2 or option 4, What you're doing, I mean, you're shifting around 3,000 or 4,000 tons of fish, which can have important impacts for the fishery, but very unlikely that we're going to have impacts that are going to be really measurable.
Okay, one more. In that particular option, it does say the research set aside 3% of each sub-ACL. Now, that's not a last minute, but that came out of the advisors meeting, I believe, right? That they supported that 3% RSA for each sub-ACL. Obviously, we can, if we decide to go with a different option, we can include the 3% for the research set aside, and then the numbers in the tables should just be adjusted slightly to accommodate that. Right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we usually, when we'll just submit our numbers with a recommendation that 3% be set aside for research, and then NIMS will publish the quotas with the set-aside taken out. I'm sorry, on that note, for analysis purposes, we assume it's all utilized.
Dave Gates.
Thank you, Lori. My question's also on the mixing rate. I just want to make sure I understand it so I know which sub-ACL is to pick. On page 36 of the document, it says, presently herring from the Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank components are combined for assessment purposes into a single coastal stock complex. So we're assuming for assessment purposes it's one stock. But we're still assuming that there are now subcomponents, which we used to call substocks, and those substocks now have a ratio of roughly 50-50. It used to be a different number years ago. I mean, I remember 7-3 at one time. But the latest information is now that they're about evenly mixed in Area 2?
No. The latest information suggests that the mix is variable and really kind of suggests that we don't know what the mix is. But if you look on pages 148 and 149 of the document, in the previous analysis, we had three sources of information to estimate how much was the inshore component. One of those sources was the Gulf of Maine Research Institute's Inshore Acoustic Survey, which ended in 2004. That survey estimated it to be about 10%. That survey had some significant problems, was peer-reviewed, and there were some recommendations made for major changes to that survey. And that survey has not continued, but nevertheless, we have an estimate of 0.1 from that data, which is 1999 to 2004. We had morphometric studies, older morphometric studies, that suggested it to be around 13%. And then we had the swept area survey biomass that we took the autumn trawl survey and we broke it up into inshore, offshore stock component and looked at swept area biomass, and that estimate was about 30%. So last time around when we did this, we had 10, 13, and 30 with a lot of uncertainty around the numbers and old information. What we did this time around, and you can see on page 149, we updated the swept area biomass from the survey. And as you can see from looking at what's in Area 1 in terms of survey biomass, it's widely variable. And the autumn trawl survey is consistent with generally consistent with the time when the fish are separated to spawn into their individual spawning components. So when you look at the autumn survey, you look at Area 1, you're looking at presumably the inshore component. But you can see that it ranges, again, from 0.18 to 0.86. So we essentially, when we updated the data, we now have information that suggests it could be anywhere from 0.1 to 0.9 or 0.86. The average from the survey data is 50%, 50-50. So we decided to not disregard any of the data that we have. So we used the entire data series that we have, including the acoustic, which said 0.1, all the way up to the 0.86 or 0.9 that we get from the survey, and we just drew randomly from that whole distribution. So we drew randomly from 0.1 to 0.9, and when you do that 10,000 times, you average 0.5, which is consistent with the new updated information about the swept area survey. So we're not saying we think it's a 50-50 mix. We're saying that mix is all over the place, and we don't know what it is. But when you take all of the available information you have and you draw, you average out to 50-50.
Okay, now at least I understand how you got where you are. But then there's the statement here that no matter where we are, we don't think there's a significant difference in impacts on the inshore-offshore stock components when comparing options 2 through 6. So is that the PDT's advice, the SSC? Who came up with that statement?
That's the PDT's sub-ACL analysis. And again, that gets back to this summary table here. And if you look at tables like this, I mean, you can obviously see year-to-year differences. This is the table for the inshore component. There's a similar table in the document for the offshore component. So you can take each year and each option, and you will see variation. You will see, okay, well, this, you know, in this year, you're going to take more inshore fish or offshore fish, but what we're saying is that all of the options that we have here are going to affect both stock components because you're increasing catch. You're adding 16,000 tons back into the fishery. You're going to impact both stock components. But the way that we've distributed the catch among the management areas in these options does not lead you to having a significant impact on one stock component over the other. You're not seeing any results here. Like, for example, you're not seeing option 4, option 5 showing up as a 0.8 for the inshore and a 0.3 for the offshore. We're not, they're all generally in the ballpark of each other in terms of probabilities, with clearly option 2 being on one end and option 6 being on the other.
Okay. I think I got what I need to know. Still, what I'm concerned with, and I think what everybody should be concerned with, is what's taken out of Area 2 is based on how much of a subcomponent it is from Area 1 and Area 3. And so it affects those two stocks, and what you're saying is it affects them roughly equally?
Based on the way that we're allocating the catch based on the information that we have at hand. I mean, don't forget also that mixing, there's mixing that applies in Area 1A as well and in Area 1B. I mean, the only place we're not mixing is Area 3. Anything that comes out of Area 3 we attribute to the offshore. But those mixing rates are applied in all of the other areas. And actually, I think, on page 150 of the document shows you by month and by area what mixing rate we apply. So, and this is for the inshore component. So when you're fishing in Area 1A, January, February, March, of course there is no fishing January, February, March, but if you were fishing in 1A in that time, you'd be catching all inshore fish. If you're fishing April through July in Area 1A, the assumption is that you're applying the summer mixing rate, which is a random draw from 0.2 to 0.8. And then 100% inshore fish from August through the rest of the year. In Area 1B, you apply the population mixing rate the whole way through because we don't have any information to suggest anything otherwise. So for Area 1B, you're drawing from 0.1 to 0.9 randomly. And same with Area 2, other than in the summertime when we know that there aren't any inshore fish down there. So this is how we apply the mixing rates in the model, the table on page 150.
And that gets back to John's original question. That's why it's so complicated, because there's more than one mixing rate, and they're being applied in different ratios in different months. Okay, now I got it. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Jeff, did I see your hand up there? Did you have a question for Lori?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I'm the chairman of the AP, and the only comment I wanted to make, I didn't bring up the AP report. I'm sorry. I've got 16 pieces of paper like you all do, tagged and, you know, dueling things.
I didn't bring one up here
either. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not going to comment on anything else. I'll wait for the motions in terms of, you know, the mixing rates and uncertainties and so forth. But the thing I wanted to point out on this, we didn't have a quorum at the AP, so therefore we didn't make any motions. And on this so-called hybrid option, I want you to be aware of the language that's on page 4 that says there was general support and most of the AP members supported it. There were a lot of people that were missing around the table. So I just wanted to point out that it doesn't represent broad spread support by all the members that were there, and there were some regional interests that were not represented at the AP. So I just wanted to say that at this time, Mr. Chairman. I think I'll leave it at that and then comment more specifically on the options as they come up on the board. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I will go to Doug Grout.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of the fact that we had not had a committee meeting, I prepared a series of motions. As I said, they are generally based on the AP report, although they're not totally. And so the first motion that I'd like to bring up, which is motion number one, is to move to adopt alternative two under section 2.1.1 of Framework 2 to allow seasonal by month splitting of any management area sub-ACL. Again, I'm going to take motions here first with Framework 2. If I get a second.
Seconded by Terry Alexander. Discussion. I think actually we have to get it up there for the... Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion. Dave Gaethel.
Doug, unless I get the wrong part of the document here, this alternative 2 on this 2.2.1.2 is constant catch approach. Doesn't appear to be what you got up there.
We're under framework. Is this on? Okay. We're under Framework 2. If you look at the document, 2.1.1 is on page 10.
Okay, it's 2.1. Okay, I thought you said 2.2. That's why it's different.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Any comments? Back to the council. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wrote something out. If I can find it, I can't, so I'll have to remember what I wrote. And really, all I wanted to do was to point out that the vessels that I work with currently exceed the catch threshold for conflict of interest. So this is final action on herring, and I will be recusing myself on these decisions.
Thank you. Anything else? I call a question on the motion. All those in favor, 16 in favor. Oppose? Abstention? Recusal? 1. 16, 0, 0, 1. The motion carries. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My second motion in Framework 2 is to move to adopt Alternative 2, Option 1, under Section 2.1.2 of Framework 2. And this is to allow up to 10% of the unutilized sub-ACL in a management area to be carried over from one fishing year to the corresponding sub-ACL for the following fishing year. But the stock-wide ACL would remain unchanged.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion. I go to the audience. Any comments? Back to the council. Call the Mary Beth.
Just one quick question. I should have asked this earlier, but in this particular option, if a sub-ACL TAC is not achieved, it could roll over, but it allows no increase to the total ACL. Is that correct? Okay. In general, I support the motion. Thank you.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Sixteen in favor. Opposed? Abstention? Recusal? 1. 16, 0, 0, 1. Motion carries. Doug.
Those are the only motions I have under for Framework 2, so my final motion is to move to submit Framework 2 to NIMS for approval.
Seconded by Tom Dempsey. Discussion. Go to the audience. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion. Fifteen. Opposed. Abstention. 1. Recusal. 1. 15. 0. 1. 1. The motion carries. Doug.
So now we're moving on to the specifications package. And my first motion for this relates to the research set-aside. And I move to adopt a research set-aside of up to 3% for each management area under Section 2.2.3.
That Matt McKenzie seconded. Discussion. Mary Beth.
In general, I understand the rationale for doing a research set-aside. We had not been doing them in recent time because of the low quotas. But I do wonder if the AP thought through the entirety of what 3% of each sub-ACL is. If you have a sub-ACL, for example, in Area 1B that's 5,000 ton or 6,000 ton, I don't know how that would functionally work. I mean, Lori, can you figure out percentage-wise? I mean...
It's been a while since we've done research set-asides, but, and I have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure that a proposal could be based on set-aside for multiple areas. The 1B set-aside obviously isn't going to be enough to fund a project on its own, but, you know, a set-aside from a combined number of areas could be, and I have to go back and look, but I believe the provisions don't require that the research be conducted in the area where the set-aside is taken or anything like that, so there's a lot of flexibility. Presumably, a research set-aside, utilization of a research set-aside would have to use set-aside for more than just the 1B quota.
Thank you. I do think we're going to need to look at how this actually does function, because I think they are going to need to be combined to actually produce enough fish to interest a vessel and to be able to pay for the research as well. But I do think the limitation is that you have to take the fish from that area. And maybe, I don't know. In general, I support the concept and the motion, and we'll just have to see if it actually will function.
Anyone else on the council? David Pierce.
Well, I obviously support the motion. I think we all should, because the way in which we have, through our previous actions on sea herring, the way in which we have taken steps to deal with river herring protection has been to focus on the river herring bycatch avoidance program that has been described by Bill Hoffman of my staff in a letter that was sent to Doug Grout. That letter was described briefly by Laurie at the beginning of presentation. That's number 6 in your binder, of course, on the web, where we highlight the fact that monies have run dry, they've run out, and as a consequence, this research set aside we view as being critical for the council being able to follow through to have the necessary monitoring for our dealing with such issues as the river herring bycatch cap, avoiding areas where river herring may be found to be in high abundance as a consequence of industry participation and support for that program. So it makes a great deal of sense, and I urge support for the strategy. I'm not sure whether this is the proper time to suggest that we state as part of the specifications package that the highest priority for cooperative research should be the river herring bycatch avoidance work, as well as portside sampling. I'm tempted to make that as part of the motion. I think I will. I move to amend, and the amendment would be that highest priority for cooperative research will be river herring bycatch avoidance and portside sampling.
Is there a second?
Charles.
Terry Stockwell. Discussion. Terry Alexander, then Tom Dempsey.
I got a question, I guess, maybe for Laurie. So what happens to that say it isn't used in 1A this year, the research set-aside money, the quota? Would that in turn get rolled back to the industry the following year, or does that go away?
There are provisions to return the research set aside to the fishery. Timing-wise, I can't recall specifically what they are, but unutilized research set aside, and this did happen in the past, was returned to the fishery before the end of the fishing year. That would be the case in this particular instance. And just really quickly to just add some clarification to this motion. When we did research set-asides in the past, the way it works is we establish a research set-aside and then it becomes an open competitive grants process. So nobody's guaranteed this money for research. Everybody submits proposals and it becomes a process that gets reviewed and certain projects get picked. Projects are picked based on the council's research priorities. So we have in the past identified research priorities for cooperative research and submitted those, which go out with the request for proposals for the research set aside. So this motion would be essentially identifying the cooperative research priorities as river herring bycatch avoidance and portside sampling, so that when the request for proposals go out, it's clear that this is where we would like the funding to go. And it will help to sort of steer the reviewers in the direction that's consistent with the council's intent.
Further council? Oh, Tom. Sorry.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. I don't disagree that these are priority issues, but as Laurie pointed out, I think more often we open up with a sort of broader call for proposals and ideas and work through the committee to refine those and then identify them going forward. So I don't necessarily disagree with these being identified for now as priorities, but I'd probably be more comfortable if we took this standardized approach that we've taken in other place, you know, other RSAs, and tasked the committee with developing priorities, because perhaps there's something that would replace one of these two that we're not currently thinking about now, and there are other things that open questions that I think we could stand to look at and benefit from.
David Pierce, then Terry Stockwell.
Ordinarily, I would share that view. However, after a great deal of debate, this council decided not to adopt any of the other river herring protective measures that were offered up as part of the package for dealing with river herring concerns. For example, river herring hotspots, prohibitions of sea herring fishing in river herring hotspots. I strongly favor that particular strategy. But we didn't go in that direction. We decided to go. And I understand why, and this makes a great deal of sense, especially because the industry supports it and they're working with us on this, the River Herring Avoidance Program. So this is part and parcel to it. If this is not given the highest priority, then we're sending the wrong signal to the service, to the industry, to anybody who's interested in the research set aside. We may as well say it now, because if we don't give it the highest priority, then we may find ourselves having to revisit how we deal with river herring protection, and maybe that would mean hotspot protection, close down fishing in hotspots, or other things. So ordinarily, I would totally agree with Tom, but in this particular case, I think we've set our course on how we're dealing with river herring, and this is part and parcel to it.
Terry Stockwell.
I'm going to follow up quickly on David's comments. He highlighted two of the highest priorities. Given the upcoming cuts in funding and the states and the federal government's inability to pay for research necessary to keep the fish the fishery operating, I think at least for the short term that this motion makes or a motion amendment makes a lot of sense.
Peter Kendall.
Yes, thank you. I would have to agree with Dr. Pierce. I agree with Tom says, but after sitting on the Herring Committee, too. I mean, we were told to put some specific AMs together specifically for river herring, and I just think that would help the cause for river herring bycatch avoidance. Thank you.
Mary Beth Tooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I agree with all of the speakers, and I think the one difference in this particular instance compared to scallops research set aside and some others. In scallops, we have an annual review of the priorities and receive proposals for the RSA, and it happens every year. We haven't actually utilized this research set aside in this plan except for in 1 year. So we don't have a systematic way of just, making these decisions and getting it out there so that proposals can come in. And so I do think we would need to move towards that, and that is, what Tom described. But this is like sort of a one-off get going. We're behind on our timing already and isn't going to happen in 2013. And if we don't do this now, we're going to miss 2014. So I agree. And I think we will need to become more systematic as we move forward. But for now, it's a good first step.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, everything I wanted to say was just said, so I don't need to say any more. I support this.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Any comments? Steve? Yeah.
My name is Steve Weiner from the Choir Coalition and Fishermen. I can see that this motion is going to pass from all the discussion, but I think you make a mistake squelching imagination and potential proposals that will come by limiting to one thing. I think there's a lot. I've been involved in this with this council on herring for a long time, and I honestly couldn't tell you what I would prioritize, so I think you shouldn't limit it. I agree with what Tom Dempsey said. Thank you.
Don?
Don Swanson, Coastal Conservation Association, New Hampshire. We support this motion on the research set aside and having council pick up to 3% of the total. Thank you.
Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although I support, actually would like to see a lot more, a raise in the number of percent set aside for research, the identifying these priorities, I wonder as a priority I know of the recreational fishing community is that there's 100% monitors on these boats, and we'd love to see that as the highest priority. I can't help but wonder, as the discussions about groundfish recovery and what's going on with our groundfish stocks and how Atlantic herring as a predator of groundfish eggs, and that there wouldn't be somebody wanting to take a look at that or maybe study that. I have a pet peeve of mine as to that, with all kind of scientific information about stocks moving north and east with ocean warming. However, we have a robust body of water that I would refer to as Rhode Island Sound, and why there's a big body of herring there, what appears to be a sustainable body of cod, and a whole lot of other species flourishing in that little body of water, and that there's going to be some interest in research into why that is occurring, as opposed to some. So there's, I think, a lot of different. Everything's a priority these days when you don't have enough money, and I just hate pigeonholing ourselves when from a more holistic view you might see other needs.
Jeff Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Council. Jeff Kalin, One's Fisheries, AP Chair. I'm not speaking as the AP Chair, but I will say that we were very pleased to bring in the request by Brad and the other people at SMAST at the AP meeting to reconsider and recommend an RSA in this fishery. And I think that this motion and Dr. Pierce's language is something that I would venture to say the majority of the AP members would have supported, because there was a lot of support around the table for putting an RSA back in the table for this project, because this is such a critical project to our ability to survive in the very difficult political climate that we find ourselves in. So I appreciate the motion, and we are in support of the, both the motion and Dr. Pierce's clarification. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Tom Dempsey, then Mark Gibson.
Just quickly, I appreciate the comments from the audience and other council members, and I think I can support this in the interest of getting this project up and off the ground, so long as in our RFP, our request for proposals, we make it clear that this list is not exclusive even in year one, and that anybody with a good research program can bring that proposal forward. Then, you know, with that said, I think I can support this.
Mark Gibson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I support the amendment. I think it's consistent with the council's track up to this point. But it's also important now to the state of Rhode Island. We have a significant obligation now relative to fisheries for sea herring in state waters by state permitted vessels, relative to river herring bycatch through our commitment to the commission's FMP. So we're glad to see this included in the amendment and support it. Thank you.
Matt McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, support this. I think getting more eyes on this problem is going to be a good thing, especially given the issues that have arisen around river herring. I think it's also important that we recognize that this is one important piece, probably one of the most important pieces of the river herring problem, but we can't. I just want to make it clear and make sure that this RSA proposal doesn't also get in the way of developing a proper catch cap and things like that. Thank you.
Anyone want to speak against it? I'll call the question. All those in favor? Sixteen in favor. Opposed? Abstentions? Recusal? 16-001. The motion carries. Doug. What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. We're back on the main motion as amended. Further discussion? All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 16, opposed, abstention, recusal, 1. 16-0-0-1. Thank you for keeping me straight. Back to you, Doug. And I know somewhere along the line they're not going to all go this easily.
I'm hoping they will. At any rate, my next motion relates to the area 1A west of Cutler set aside, the fixed gear set aside. I move to adopt a fixed gear set aside of 295 metric tons for the fishing gear, the fixed gear fishermen fishing in the area 1A west of Cutler, Maine, for 2013 to 2015.
Motion seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion. Go to the audience. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? Fifteen. Opposed? Excuse me, Mark, did you have your hand up?
No.
No, okay. Opposed, abstention, recusal. So it must have been...
No, she's not here.
Laurie's not here. Not here. So 15-0-0-1. Doug.
My next motion involves the sub-ACL splits and... there's a table associated with it, but what I'll just read for the public listening in, the sub-ACL numbers as opposed to the whole table, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman. I move to adopt the following hybrid option developed by the AP for sub-ACLs among the four herring management areas for 2013 to 2015. Sub-ACL Area 1A, 31,200. Sub-ACL Area 1B, 4,600 metric tons. Sub-ACL Area 2, 30,000 metric tons. And Sub-ACL Area 3, 42,000 metric tons.
That's seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion. Tom Dempsey, then Terry Stockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I've said before, every time in this process where I see a group of people who usually disagree about just about everything, coming to a consensus and supporting a position, I take notice, and I treat that, especially when it comes from the advisory panels, I treat that with a great deal of respect. And in my mind, the advisors have done, in this case, exactly what we've asked them to do, and they sat down together with a wide range of different interests and hammered something out that as the report says, a great majority can support. So I think we'd need a very good reason, given that this is in the range, a very good reason not to support the AP consensus opinion here and this hybrid option. And I don't have one. So I think given that and given the work of the AP, I support this alternative. I think it makes sense for a lot of the reasons, actually, that the AP members themselves highlighted in their discussion.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank Lori and the PDT for a lot of work and the AP for developing the hybrid proposal. But after considering the PDT's advice on risk, I've got a motion to amend. And my motion to amend, and I'll provide the rationale if I get a second, would be 32,000 for Area 1A, 5,800 for 1B, 30,000 for Area 2, and 40,000 for Area 3.
Is there a second? Seconded by Vince. Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a tough spot we're in. I appreciate, I mean, Tom Dempsey's comments about the work of the AP. I'm looking at probably, you know, just a different version of the same scenario. A slight tick up to Area 1A, which would address the acute bait needs the lobster fishery has in the Gulf of Maine. Probably the most controversial will be the increase of 1B to 5,800. 5,800 is a week of fishing. We've got constant overages and inability to monitor. It's about a week's worth of fishing. I think we'll have a better chance of staying within that or if coming in from underneath it and allowing a rollover. The 30,000 reflects the AP's hybrid development, and the 40,000 is a slight downtick, which reflects the upward of the two increases in 1A and 1B.
Mary Beth Tooley.
Yeah, I also appreciate Tom's comments, and because I think it is, this is very, very close to what the AP recommended. The movement around of numbers is really very slight. And I think, you know, it snowed that day, so there was no quorum. And I think they certainly were on the right track, but, you know, missing some input from a couple people can really make a difference. And it really addresses or helps. I'm not sure it totally addresses the difficulties we've had in managing 1B, which causes the overages. When you go under 5,000 ton, that's when we've seen these overages. And then if you have an overage, you know, at small numbers, that can be a high percent. And then that kicks in the following year, and the number goes down even further. You know, and having 1B come out with, you know, an annual TAC of under 3,000 metric ton, the agency can't manage it. And so you're in a perpetual cycle. So if you don't put at least a minimum amount of fish in there, it's a problem. And so I think this tries to do exactly that and shifts the other numbers just ever so slightly. So I think I do appreciate the AP and their work and what they did, and I think this is very, very close, and I would support this motion.
Anyone else on the council? David Pierce and Matt.
Yeah, Terry, this set of numbers that you offer up as an amendment, do you have any idea as to how those numbers would fit into the table on page 16 of Lori's handout, the sub-ACL analysis that shows the 2015 projected cast to biomass ratio, all those probabilities? Have any idea? Does it fall within the mid-range, for example? So it's pretty much the same as option 3, 4, or 5.
Thank you for the question, David. I was reflecting upon the advice were given from Lori that they all were within that range, and I would have to defer to her for an accurate answer.
Yeah, I mean, generally, they're all within the range. You know, I had taken a look at the AP's hybrid option, and like I think I mentioned earlier, I anticipated that, you know, if you ran the AP hybrid option through, you'd end up in the inshore in 2015 above option 2, but probably below 0.5, so probably somewhere between 0.36 and 0.5, and in the offshore, excuse me, slightly below the 0.6. I mean, again, so, you know, it's hard to say, but what you're talking about here in terms of the difference between what's proposed and the AP hybrid is 2,000 tons of offshore fish from Area 3 that you've then moved inshore into Areas 1A and 1B. 2,000 tons is for, you know, a large fishing trip, four or five or six trips. So you're talking about the difference in, you know, that number of trips in Area 3 versus, you know, probably a greater number of smaller trips in 1A and 1B. But it's a very small amount of fish on a relative scale.
Yeah. If I may, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up. If it wasn't for the fact that we have a very healthy resource, the assessment has indicated that we're way above the target. A nickel here, a dime here, so to speak, what difference does it make? We're looking at a very strong resource. So if we were on the edge in terms of resource status, I'd have a different point of view. I would want to force the fishery farther offshore, less fishing inshore. That's generally my attitude, less fishing inshore, more fishing offshore. But again, the status of the SOC information, the recommendations from the SSC does convince me that the option offered up by Terry does have a lot of merit.
I have Matt McKenzie, then John Bullard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think a 25% increase in the smallest fishing area is not just a slight uptick. We're trying to rebuild stocks there, and while increasing the not increasing the herring quota isn't by itself going to solve it, it certainly is going to avoid a lot of the problems. That's an area that a lot of people use, a lot of people fish there. I think raising that tack is that quota for that region is just not the right way to go. Thank you.
John Bullard.
I'm going to abstain on this one rather than supporting it for the reason that David was kind of homing in on. The analysis really isn't done, but it does come very close to increasing the risk of overfishing to over 50%, and so we'd want to do this. It's close. It might be a little bit over, and so we're going to abstain on this one.
Dave Gaethel.
I mean, I think something people should keep in mind here, this is almost like the Gulf of Maine, Georgia's Bank Haddock issue. You've got a common border here between 1B and 3 of over 100 miles. You've got a common border on the other side with 1A of probably 125 miles. You know, these fish move back and forth. That's why I asked Lori all these questions about the mixing rate earlier. The fact is that the fish in 1B are a hybrid. When they're probably over towards the Area 3 line, they're probably more Area 3 fish. When they're over towards the 1A line, they're probably more Area 1A fish. But, you know, given the relative numbers and the mixing rates and all the things that Lori explained, what comes out of 1B is almost irrelevant because it's such a small number compared to the total. And I do agree with what Mary Beth said. I mean, if the fishery takes on the order of 5,000 tons a week, having a number less than that is a de facto closure because you can't fish there and you immediately exceed the quota. So I don't see how putting I was going to ask this question before the motion to amend was made, why the number in 1B was so small, because I didn't see how that was a feasible number. So all those things considered, I think you should consider voting for the motion to amend because it's biologically probably indistinguishable, and management-wise, it makes the fishery viable in the area as opposed to being a de facto closure.
Anyone else from the council? Tom Dempsey, then Doug.
Thanks. I disagree with the comments about the relative size of moving these fish around, and I again support the underlying motion of the AP's work. I mean, is it what I would prefer? No, I think we could all probably find 1,000 metric tons to put in this area or that area. I mean, we could do this all day. We have six options in the document. The AP came up with a seventh, and now this is an eighth. I think at some point we need to respect the work of the AP. And as long as we're talking about relativity, if you're talking about 1,000 metric tons from an offshore area, it's relatively a much smaller fraction of the overall catch there. In 1B, 1,000 tons ends up being the better part of 25%. The AP's motion, the consensus motion here, the ACLs, the sub-ACLs in Area 1B roughly track the overall increase in the ABC. It's about 7-8%. And in the Area 1B, sub-ACL there would be an increase of 7-8%. This motion would be an increase of about 25%. That's significant. And Dr. Pierce brought up earlier the issue of river herring bycatch. On every different chart or every attempt we've ever made to highlight spatially where river herring bycatch occurs, it's in 1B, right off the backside of the Cape. And this measure will put a significant increase of our herring effort, our sea herring effort, into that area where we know we catch river herring. I think that's a problem. I can't support that. Additionally, just the concept that there's a sort of magical breaking point somewhere around 5,000 metric tons in this area that the fishery is then allowed, tends not to go over. Well, I think it was 06, 07, we had an overage on a 10,000 metric ton quota in that area. mean, there's no magic there. Overages are something that we're dealing with in another part of today's discussion. We're dealing with the structural mechanisms by which we eliminate overages and deal with them. No problem. But I think the fishery should be held to reasonable quotas, reasonable sub-ACLs in each of these areas. And this is a significant increase into an area that we know has river herring bycatch issues and overall represents, I think, an inferior option to what the AP came up with. I support the underlying option, and I can't support this change to it at this time.
I'm going to go to Doug Grout, then I'm going to go to the audience.
So as I compared this to option two, which seemed to be the most favorable from the impact to the inshore stock, this essentially transfers 5,000 metric tons from Area 3, which is 0% inshore stock, to Area 2, which is a mix. That's when the fishery occurs. So clearly it's not going to be as beneficial to the inshore stock as option 2. And the other aspect that I'm sure you're all aware of is our struggling as a committee with Area 1B. This area was created when we had a lot larger quotas, and we've been looking for options to try to deal with this. And, you know, quite frankly, one of the first things that came out of the idea shoot was to combine Area 1 into one area, just put it all in one quota. But we were told that needed to be done an amendment. And then I've also heard some concerns about from some people about combining those two areas. But we've got to come up with some kind of way to address this very small quota in an area, because we have had overages there. That's where most of our overages are, because of the challenge that the service has in managing such a small quota with such a very the large fishing power that our directed fishery has.
Going to go to the audience for comments. Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I'm opposed to both motions, and as I said before, this AP compromise wasn't a universal compromise of the AP. We didn't have anybody from Rhode Island there that fishes in the winter fishery. Our other partners in the mackerel fishery weren't there. Dave Ellington wasn't there. I was a chairman, so I'm not allowed to say anything, which I'm about ready to give your chairmanship back, Captain Howard, honestly, because you go into these situations and you have to lay your own constituents' perspective aside. And, you know, I'd made a comment earlier in the meeting that option 5 seemed to be the best approach, because we're focused on Area 2, and we have said for months and months and months that a 10,000-ton allocation in Area 2 is appropriate to allow us to have the potential to catch the mackerel fishery. And the mackerel math goes like this. Last year, we were shut down. We had a 22,000 metric ton quota down there. The Canadians take 10,000 for their factories every single winter out of there, and that's fine. The American fishermen sell that to them. There's a domestic bait market of about 10,000 metric tons. That uses up all the quota down there. The mackerel fishery usually is producing fish that has a mix of herring in it of 3 to 1. So if we're going to catch 32,000 metric tons of mackerel, we're going to need 10,000 tons more herring based on what happened last year when we were shut down in February. So neither one of these options addresses the Area 2 need to the extent that it should. And also, neither one of these options do what option 5 does, and that is recognizes that these specs are not going to be in place until the summertime. So if we don't make some provision to reallocate fish in area in 2013 somehow, we're going to leave fish in the water. So if these motions survive, I think the council needs to consider, what do you do in 2013 when you're not going to have the specs in place until September, July maybe. So, you know, if you look at option 5, you end up the same place in Area 1A. you end up in the same place in area 1B, and you move 2,000 from George's into area 2, which is what we need in area 2. I don't see why that would be a negative, and it applies the additional fish that we won't realize in Area 2 up into Area 1B or 1A, depending on how you want to split it. In the option that's in the document on page 19, all of that goes into 1B. I mentioned during the meeting that we might want to consider a hybrid that would move half of that into 1A in 2013 and half into 1B. So I think you've got to deal with 2013. Neither one of these motions do that. And we are extremely upset that we have not been able to convince the council and the committee to move a full 10,000 tons into Area 2. And there, I was not able to say any of this because I was the chairman of the AP. The only reason we got the hybrid option on the table was because people were going to Area 2, which completely ignores the Area 2 issue that we've been raising for months. And during a break, I did say to a few of the guys, I said, you know, what you're not considering our need in Area 2. So then they came back with this hybrid. So I'm opposing both options, and I think you're given a short shift in Area 2. I think 38,000 on George's is significant, and if you could move another 2,000 into Area 2, we think that would be appropriate. And make provision for the fall fishery in 2013. There's a table on page 106, table 17, which indicates that November, December Area 2 catches are frequent. And, you know, these fish that we're taking in the winter are the largest fish for the market generally. There's no spawn in them. There's no feed in them. And even though this risk analysis might lead you to believe that some percent is Area 2 fish, we don't know what it is. You used to say 20%. Could be Area 3 fish. Who knows, you know. But it's essentially offshore fish. They're winter fish. They're not in spawning condition. And I'm really disappointed after months and months and months of churning and burning on this thing that this motion does not reflect our need in Area 2. That fishery goes all the way down to Hatteras, and I'm the only person in the room from the Mid-Atlantic. And I was the only person at the AP meeting that's involved in the winter fishery directly, except for maybe Mr. Bechrist, who's in the audience. So I'm not happy with these motions, and I hope that they both get voted down. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Kane, commercial fisherman, Chatham, Massachusetts. And once again, I'm getting confused at this council meeting. Not a half hour ago, we voted up a 3% RSA. I'm all in favor of that. The reason we need that money is to see what we're doing with the river herring. That's been a critical issue in Massachusetts. I oversee a river on the Cape, so I'd just like to come to this mic and say I'm in favor of Doug Grout's motion. I think Tom Dempsey explained a great rationale. River herring is a concern, and if you look at the SMAS report from last year, you know, when they gave you all the different colors for the different blocks, Area B was solid red. You know, tremendous bycatch of river herring. So I can't support increasing that 1B allocation, not the 5,800. I mean, it's a travesty now, and we're supposed to be getting a handle on river herring between the Mid-Atlantic Council and the New England Council. So I would hope you folks would vote up Doug Grout's motion and put aside Terry Stockwell's motion. Thank you.
Chris. Hi, Chris Wiener. I'm a bluefin tuna fisherman. I think I can say I'm speaking for Choir and American Bluefin Tuna Association on this one. First of all, I support Doug Grout's motion. I think, you know, I'll step back. I think you'd be hard-pressed, and I'm not going to argue the science because I know the science is the science and it's what we're using, but there aren't many people in the Gulf of Maine that would agree that there's any reason to go up at all. But, you know, we know that the decisions were made to go up based on the science. And, you know, we wanted to see, our main focus was how you split it up and hoping that it was done right. I thought Doug Grout's motion did it fine. I'm not sure I believe that you need 50. I don't even understand why you would go to 5,800, because I follow it pretty closely, and I've never seen, I mean, there might be a week in there somewhere that was 5,800, but it's, you know, for the most part, it's 3,000 to 4,000 is the most you see them catching a week. If anything, I think increasing like this would bleed you over into a second week, and then you end up going over, but that's besides the point. The reason I don't support this is because it makes no sense based on what we've seen to be doing this kind of increase in the inshore, in my opinion. You know, it's one thing to do 31.2 and 4,600, but, you know, that's what we could live with. That's not what we support. That's what we could live with. And, you know, I think that anything above that makes no sense. And I don't really understand why you need 5,800. And you know, in talking to lobstermen and lobster dealers or bait dealers, what are you going to do with all of that in May? I mean, it's feedy stuff. You aren't going to use it for food. You're going to use it for whatever bait demand there is, and the rest of it can get frozen, I guess. But any bait dealer would tell you that it's not ideal to have frozen feedy herring. So I don't even understand why you would do that. That's going to be caught in May, let's be honest. And, I can speak for most fishermen in this region that do not think, as opposed to what Dr. Pierce said, that this is a very healthy resource. And I know that as managers you have to focus on the science, so I'm not going to argue with you on that. But in the back of your minds, I don't see how anyone can think that this is a healthy resource, or is healthy, a very healthy resource at the very least. But, again, we support Doug's motion. Don't support this amended motion. And I hope the council thinks long and hard about any more increases above what is already hard to accept in Doug's motion. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, council members. My name is Jeffrey Pike. I'm here today on behalf of Bumblebee Seafoods. In 2004, Bumblebee purchased Connors Stinson's, and at that time we had the two remaining sardine plants in Prospect Harbor, Maine, and Black's Harbor, Canada. In 2010, we were forced to shut down Prospect Harbor because of lack of fish. In 2004, the quota was 180,000 metric tons for the entire herring fishery. In 2010, the quota had been reduced 50% to 90,000 tons. We're still very much involved in herring management and the herring fishery on both sides of the border. And sustainable management can be no more important to us than anyone else in this room. So we encourage you to support strong measures for conservation so that we will have herring available for sardines in the future. We also purchase herring on the border transfers. For the last half dozen years, we've purchased 5 permits for carriers to come over. For 3 years there, we got no fish. Last year, I think we got 900 tons in the border transfer. So that's very important to us. We also annually purchase between 8,000 and 10,000 metric tons a year from U.S. fishermen. We truck herring up from as far as Cape May, up to Canada, believe it or not. We purchase herring, Fall River, New Bedford, Point Judith, all the way down the coast. And our greatest demand, or rather, the shortage appears mostly in the winter. That's when we have the hardest time sourcing fish. So we would support an increase in Area 2 because that's where the fish are. The document here says the need of the mackerel fishermen, but it should also say the need of the herring processors. That herring bycatch that the mackerel boats get is extremely valuable to us. As I think Jeff Kalin mentioned, it's big fish, it's healthy, and it's not feedy. So it's a high-quality fish, and it's worth it for us to truck it up all the way to Canada from Cape May, New Jersey. Our preference would have been option 4. Listening to the comments, we would support Doug Grout's motion. It does give an additional, I believe, 8,000 tons to Area 2. And it keeps the pressure off of the backside of the Cape, where we've heard there's a high probability of catching river herring, which we certainly don't want that to happen with the boat. So one last comment. In the document, around page 118, it talks about National Standard Number 8 and the requirements for considering the impacts on fishing communities. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for Prospect Harbor, and there's 130 good jobs right now that were lost because we didn't get the fish, even though we tried to get a processor preference for value-added herring. We would ask in the future that perhaps you look at the whole picture and those cannery jobs and make sure that if there is ever is a chance to have a cannery back in this side of the border, that we do so. So thank you very much.
Anyone else? Against? Yep. Somebody in back had their hand up? Yep.
Tim Tower, a seafood restaurant owner, commercial fisherman, recreational fisherman. I can support Doug Grout's motion. I can't support this one. It's too contentious. It's with the bycatch issue in 1B. I can't support any increase in 1B. Although I love Terry Stockwell in every other way, this one I can't support. Thank you.
Now, in the back, you had your hand up? Yes. Come on up. No, not you. We're going to the back.
Hi, Jenny Beekrist, and I own Purslane Bait and represent one of the herring boats in Maine. And first of all, Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank Doug for really recognizing what the AP members said. Even though we did not have a quorum, there were not a lot of people there, like Jeff said, but it has renewed my faith in this whole process, because it really gets really discouraging sometimes that you go to these meetings, and yes, while a lot of people were missing, the people that were there traveled in crappy weather, and it's very refreshing to finally be listened to, because a lot of times we're not. I really have gotten to the point, after being on the committee since 97 or something like that, that it's like, what's the point? Because we don't get listened to a lot, and especially when there are not a lot of members there, we don't even vote anymore, which I don't know when that happened, but it's very discouraging. So I want to thank Doug for listening to us, and while, the thing is not perfect, the one that he did, I can't support Terry's, mostly because of the 1B quota, that I feel very strongly about the bycatch and the fact that it is not really usually great fish. And although I recognize he was probably trying to help the seiners in 1A give us some more quota, and I thank him for that, I still like our original motion, and I thank you and hope you listen.
Thank you. And now in the front, yeah.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Sean Tibbetts. I'm a commercial fisherman. I'm also a charterhead boat captain. I spent a lot of time inshore, 1A, 1B. I can't support any increase in those areas. We're trying to rebuild a cod stock. They need something to eat. Once again, I support Mr. Grout. Thank you.
Patrick?
Thank you, Rip. Patrick Paquette. On the very rare occasion that I'm not spending my day in a hotel doing this, I still actually get to run a few trips a year on the charter boat that I'm a partner in, and we operate out of Chatham, Massachusetts. And so I just want to give you one other perspective on Area 1B, is that especially at the end of the year in August, on one side of the state federal waters line is the recreational striped bass fleet, and on the other side of that line is the midwater trawl fleet fishing in 1B and at the very inshore end of 1B. That's a user conflict, and it's a user conflict of the highest priority in my area. When the fleet is done fishing there, we tend to have to then go fish off the backside of Nantucket for striped bass just because of what happens. And I'm not saying it's just that's what happens. That's our reality, is that when the industrial fleet
is done fishing in that inside part of 1B in August, we end up having to chase bass to the backside of Nantucket, doubling our trip cost just because that's what happens when that kind of fishing goes on. So on top of all the other concerns about 1B, it's a user conflict at all. I'm very grateful that we're actually at a New England Council meeting and that we're talking about an allocation of a stock and actually managing a stock, not how we deal with whatever the law is going to force us into that box. This isn't a biological question. It's truly an allocation question. I just ask you to consider our fleet as well, because we'd like to see no more increase in 1B. And just like everybody said, however, that hybrid option was all the different fleets that are involved at Herring, and I'd go out of my way to support that, because that AP worked really hard, and they didn't fight. They came up with an answer for you, so please support what they're asking for. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yeah, I see a hand back. Yeah.
I'm Dr. Molly Ledkavich. I run the Large Pelagics Research Center at UMass Amherst, and I don't wish to make a specific comment about the recommendations, but I did want to say that we haven't participated in the herring discussion, but I do want to call to your attention Atlantic herring as a forage species. Our lab and Dr. Walt Gollett at GMRI and UMaine have done a lot of specific ecosystem work on the interactions between herring and tuna, and some of these papers are just hitting peer review now. And in terms of understanding of ecosystem relationships, one of what we're learning is that the condition and the quality of herring and the size classes available to the forage or the predators such as bluefin tuna is extremely important. And the work that's been done shows that there's a really explicit relationship between condition and quality. And the new studies that were coming out of Walt Gollett's latest work with collaborators is that it's not just about abundance, it's about quality and condition and sizes of herring for the forage. So I just would like to point out to you might want to look into some of that explicit ecosystem information. We only focused on bluefin tuna, but I think bluefin tuna might represent the importance of herring and the quality of herring to the Gulf of Maine predators. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council, David Pierce.
Yeah, when I spoke to the motion to amend, I said it had merit, and I thought at the time that it did have merit. However, when Tom made his comments about Area 1B, I took a look at the chart and reminded myself that because of Tom's remarks that Area 1B boundaries do indeed put us in a spot, really herring bycatch spots. So after giving further thought to where the boundaries are, and after giving further thought to the fact that I am chair of the sea herring section of ASMFC and I have a meeting in a few weeks, I don't believe it would be wise of me to go down to ASMFC and to tell them that I'm supporting a motion. I supported a motion that would actually put more pressure in Area 1B, where I have said, based upon my own sampling, my staff sampling, the river herring bycatch spots. At first, I thought that the split that we had for Area 1B was going to take care of my concerns, but then it doesn't, because May and December, 100% of Area 1B would be, that's where the quota would be, May through December, so it's a fall bycatch. So I've rethought this, and of course the industry comments, the comments from the audience have also been very persuasive, so I'm going to support the original motion and not the motion to amend.
Mary Beth.
Well, I obviously won't be voting on the motion to amend, but I support the motion to amend. Also probably not going to die on my sword on you know, what is really a very small amount of fish, which Lori pointed out to us, which everyone making this really big deal over what is relatively very small, even for 1B, which, if you look on the chart, is not centered around the backside of the Cape. It is a large area. We take fish up on caches. Yes, a lot of fish does come out of the backside of the Cape. I have here the proportional catch by month. And it's true, in August of 1 year, we took 22% of the catch out of 1B in that month. But if you look at that over a 10-year period, we have a lot of zero catches. I'm thinking to myself, now, I don't think we've ever been down there in August. So I looked it up. Most of them are 1%, 2%, 3%. So the picture of the striper fisherman on one side of the line and the herring boat on the other side of the line in August more than likely happened in 1 year. It's concerning to hear people around the table talk about rebuilding the stock. We're not rebuilding the stock in any area. That's not a goal that we have. In fact, the stock assessment, the discussion there is about the stock being at carrying capacity. So there's some confusion around these discussions that becomes very troubling. We have a healthy resource. We're talking about moving around a small amount of fish so that we can manage a sub-area that keeps being exceeded. That is it. We're talking about the difference of, you know, not even a week's worth of fish being moved. It gets absurd after a while. It truly does. You wonder if people are reading the documents about the status of this resource and really looking at the information. And somebody said to you, well, you know, we don't need fish in May, and bait dealers don't think they need fish in May. Well, I work for a bait dealer. Our company, we have a bait division in our company, and we've been selling bait in the state of Maine since 1940-something. And when I go into the office, they say, yes, we do need fish in May. We have 5,000 lobstermen in the state of Maine who are all setting out their traps and staking their ground, and they'd like to have some bait. So, you know, in the month of May, there is really no other place to go for fish, and the quality of those fish are just fine for bait, and we've been using them every year for many years. So, I mean, as I said, whatever. After a while, the whole discussion is ludicrous. And the whole point of trying to do something like this was to give the agency a better chance to manage this sub-ACL by moving a small amount of fish that really doesn't matter.
Anyone else? Dave Gaethel.
I mean, I do actually think there is a bigger discussion here. And that discussion is, in this case, we are actually managing the fish in the fishery. And you know, we're not up against some kind of number that we have to match this time, because it's not overfishing. There's no overfishing occurring. And the reason I supported this is that a lot of times in these last couple of years, when the water temperatures in the inshore Gulf of Maine have gotten very warm, the herring leave 1A. They move outside, and that's what happened last year. And they go to caches, and they go to the area up to the east there. They're in the eastern part of 1B. They're not down towards the Cape. It's way too warm down there. And so,
thinking about the bycatch,
you know, those fish, if I thought the fish were going to be caught in October and November, 3 miles off of Chatham, I wouldn't support the motion. But I think they're going to be caught the middle of July to the 1st of September, and they're going to be caught about 50 miles southeast of Rockland. And so it gets to your knowledge of the fishery and where you think the fish are going to be caught. And you know, it would have provided last year, for a period of time when the fish disappeared in 1A and the boats couldn't get to Area 3 for various reasons, weather-related and stuff, the possibility of some bait when it was needed in the lobster fishery, when the lobster fishery was in a very high state of productivity. And again, I don't remember what the original number was, 4,600, 4,800. You're talking minuscule amounts of fish here. I mean, a couple of boats fishing one day catch the difference between the two motions. So, you know, because of the quota monitoring issue, because of when I think the fish are going to be caught, I think it's rational to move a little bit more fish into 1B on the pretty real chance that the fish may leave 1A again this summer if we have a summer like last year. Thank you.
Tom, last bite.
I'll keep it short. I think we've heard a wide range of serious concerns, a wide range of people invested in this fishery, who think this small amount of fish does matter. And on the other side of the equation, we've heard people pushing for this who say it really doesn't matter. It doesn't amount to much. So I think the short-term decision is clear. I think we can vote this down and support the AP's consensus opinion. If it doesn't matter on one side and matters on the other side, then that makes sense to me. I think we do have a longer-term issue, and that's the problem with a small, oddly shaped, problematic sub-ACL management area, and that's 1B. And maybe we could deal with a motion later in the day that would actually get us towards
a more rational way of separating inshore and offshore and dealing with what has become a problematic sort of management area scheme here. But in the short term, I think we've heard compelling evidence that some people are concerned and others doesn't actually amount to that much. So I think our short-term decision is clear, and again, maybe we can fix this long-term in subsequent action.
Anyone who hasn't spoken on this? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion to amend? Five. Opposed? Eleven. Opposed. Abstention. Recusal. One. Okay. So 5-11-1. Motion fails. We're on the back on the main motion. Further discussion. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion. Fifteen in favor, opposed, abstention, one, recusal, one, 15-0-1-1. Doug, you've got three more motions? Three?
Four.
I think we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and finish up. So people want to be back at 4:16.
I'm getting a little confused here. We're talking about splitting the sub-ACL monthly, which is what we just did. We just authorized that in Framework 2 and voted to submit it. I understand the argument that Mary Beth is making, but the bottom line is that the measure that's being voted on here is not a seasonal closure. It's not an area closure. It is a split of the sub-ACL monthly, which we just authorized in Framework 2. There may be reasons for that split, and I think Mary Beth had, you know, and there may be reasons that the maker of the motion voted for these particular months, but the fact of the matter is we're talking about when we're going to allow the quota in this area to be taken. And my initial understanding when we started talking about delaying the 1B fishery was because we were concerned about the fact that it got taken so quickly last year. And I think it was taken by February. And so I was under the impression that the delay was in part to try to address that issue. So there may be a lot of reasons why we're doing it, but if you want to just take a step back and look at what we're doing, yeah, we just agreed that we were going to allow it. So whether or not you support it or not, that's fine, but the measure itself is not a seasonal closure. It is a split of the quota by month, which we just voted to allow in Framework 2. That doesn't mean you have to support this. But the mechanism and the measure is exactly what we just agreed that we were going to do in Framework 2.
Laurie, is the framework a separate document that will be submitted sooner than the spec package and will be hopefully implemented before the spec package? That's what Mitch's question is. Is it a separate document to be submitted before the spec package?
Same document, same timeline for submission, separate actions. So once it gets to NIMS, the specs will be reviewed and approved separate from Framework 2. The language in Framework 2 says that because of the late implementation in 2013, that Framework 2 becomes effective in 2014. So whatever splits, and it says that in the document, whatever splits we're contemplating in this specs package would apply to 2014 and 2015 only. So nothing for this year.
Yeah, may I just clarify? I was referring to seasonal splits, not seasonal closures, although that's the word that came out of my mouth. and yes, the framework provision needs to be in place before the seasonal split can occur as a spec.
But given that we're okay, it's not a problem.
Correct.
Okay. Dave Gaethel.
Well, based on the way Lori explained it, maybe the wording of the motion isn't quite right. I mean, I thought this was to set up seasons. That's what it says, seasonal splits. But what I'm understanding, Lori, it's monthly allocations of the months that the fishery is open. And that's a different thing. I mean, it may not sound much different, but it sounds a lot different to me. In other words, now we're saying we've gone to monthly allocations, and these are the months that we're going to have those monthly allocations in. Is that correct to the maker in the motion to amend?
Well, as it says, a seasonal sub-ACO split with those splits is offered up in the motion to amend, which, to my way of thinking, accomplishes two purposes. The original purpose for going with a seasonal split with the added benefit of some protection for river herring, the river herring hotspots in particular. The quota, if the quota was 10,000 metric tons or 12,000 metric tons for Area 1B, it would be a different story, but this is May, June, July, August, September, October. That is a lot of months for fishing in Area 1B for a relatively low quota. So with November and December being included in the time when there would be 0% allocation of the sub-ACL, once again, we're not foregoing the opportunity to catch herring. We're not going to impact the fleet in a meaningful way because they have plenty of months to fish for the sea herring in that Area 1B. It's just getting two bites of the apple. With one important bite being removal of fishing in areas where the river herring bycatch is expected to be large, and I know that to be a case through the sampling that we've done in November and December. So I have the motion to amend is as it stands, and if it was going to impact the sea herring fishery in Area 1B in a meaningful way, I'd have reservations, but I don't believe it will, again, because the quota is already so small and has already been said, it can be taken in a relatively few trips.
Most of the documents have seasonal, then monthly, in parentheses after it. Would that clear up some of your question, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we stick to the months that we're going to allocate the fish in, call it seasonal, call it monthly, whatever it is, that's a pretty straightforward, understandable argument. We got so many months, and we're going to split the fish up in those months. And I thought that was Doug's original motion. Leave the river herring out of it. I mean, it may de facto help river herring, but don't make that as an argument, because what I'm afraid of is that is something that has not been discussed with the public prior to this meeting, that we're going to now close areas for river herring. I think Mary Beth has a legitimate point there that it could open it up to legal challenge. And so I would just make the argument that we're going to have these months and we're going to split the fish up during those months. And you can amend that to be whatever months you want. But then it's limited to those months, and leave the rest of it aside because of the issues of notifying the public.
Lori.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to run into any problems here, but those are exactly the points, and I think it gets to Mary Beth's point, too. First of all, with this motion, I think it would be clearer for Area 1B if it said 0% January to April, 100% May to October, and 0% November, December. Then, again, we're talking about, I mean, the whole purpose behind allowing seasonal splitting in Framework 2 is to better manage the herring fishery and to manage the pace of the fishery and manage our ability to monitor the quotas. So though when you develop seasonal splits, monthly splits, those are the things that you should be thinking about, how to manage the quota in the herring fishery. That was my understanding of why we were talking about initially splitting the 1B quota into these months. Now, in the analysis, we will look at impacts on non-target species and other fisheries. And it very well may be that there are certain times in certain areas in 1B where not allowing the herring fishery or not having quota available may benefit river herring. We can't tell you all of that right now because we're focused on managing the herring fishery. That's what the specifications are about. So if you support this motion, the rationale at least primarily should be specific to the herring fishery and managing the sub-ACL in Area 1B and avoiding all of the bad things that happen if you either have a derby or an overage. And then we might have all these other great things that will come of that, but that will all play out in the analysis. But really the whole focus of the specs is on how to deal with allocating the catch to the fishery. So, you know, this still may have merit in that regard, and that's why, again, I thought we originally were talking about delaying the 1B fishery, but all of the other indirect benefits that it may have, we're going to have to look into more. I would just encourage you to think about how you want to manage the catch and the vessels that are participating in the 1B fishery.
Dr. Pierce, what's your thought on Lori's suggestion of doing January to April 0%, then May through October, 100% May through October, then 0 November, December, just so that you keep it in the calendar?
That's a clearer way to do it. Makes it within 1 year. It doesn't make it look as if we're lapping over years. We're talking about ACL. So, yes, that's a very good suggestion, and I would have my motion changed in that way. So 0%.
Fine-tuning again?
Yes, that recognizing, just as with other splits, like what we were considering in Area 2, if the 100% is not taken by October, the remainder rolls over into November, December.
Yes.
Doug Grau.
Well, thank you, David, for that clarification, because that was one of the things that I felt was important. Just to clarify, we're talking about a calendar year. But in all due respect, I think we're arguing over something that is really irrelevant compared to the underlying motion, because in all probability, with whatever quota we've set in 1B, it's not going to be available by November, December. They're going to take it during May through October in reality. So I have no problem with this, because I don't think it's substantively different in effect than the underlying motion that was there.
Mary Beth.
Well, as far as the impact to the herring fishery, historically we've had more fish in 1B, and I certainly would like to see us get some back. And if we move in this direction, the 2 months that are most important to the fishery in 1B, or 2.5 months, whatever, is May, because there's really no other place to go. And when 1A closes, again, that later part of the year, there's no other place to go. So the hardest part about having 1B close this past year early is that when 1A closed, the fishery was shut down completely, all areas of the fishery, until the first of the year. And that's a hardship on markets, and that's a hardship on the crew. You know, when they figure out the second week in November, they're all done. You know, Christmas is 7 weeks out, and no more fishing for you this year. And so it does have a significant impact. And I'm wondering if the impacts of this are analyzed in this document. I don't think anybody anticipated this in the spec package, and I think it's unfair to insert it at this time.
Anyone else on the council? This is a little bit of a change. Jeff, I'll go back if you've got a comment. You don't want to comment, Jeff? Or you? What's that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought you, I heard you say, stay in your seat, I'll come back to you. I thought you had somebody up here that wanted to say something. But I think I'm going to oppose this motion, too, for the same reasons that Mary Beth raised. I mean, it really is a de facto river herring closure that's being attempted here, and I don't think that was what went out to public hearing. So, you know, if I was a council member, I definitely would raise a point of order about this motion. The reason why we talked about a split in Area 1B was to delay the fishery so that you could do an accounting of what had been taken there to minimize potential to run over the sub-ACL, which, by the way, has no necessary biological implications until you go over the total ACL. Everybody's running around in circles about a sub-ACL overage. This is the first year in 100 and some years that we've exceeded the management advice in the herring fishery, where we're 104% of the total ACL or something like that. So, I mean, this is just remarkable to me, and I think the motion should be out of order because it does, its intent is clear to close areas to protect river herring, which is not something that Amendment 5 did. That's my perspective on it. I know Lori disagrees with me. I've already heard her say that, but you did. You were arguing that this isn't about river herring at all. It's just simply allocating the sub-ACL. No, it's not. It's about river herring. And we didn't go out to public hearing about river herring closures in the specs. Should be found. Oh, you shut me off. I think the motion should be found out of order. Okay, maybe I did. I did myself. Anyway, I'm going to sit down.
I thought you were. Laurie.
I just want to ask, I think I'm a little confused. In the document, the original split that was proposed and at least contemplated in the document and run through some of the analysis is 0% January to April and 100% for the remaining May to December. Now, the change that we're talking about here is just limiting that 100% May to October and making it 0 November, December. So I'm a little unclear what the significant change is and what where is the significant impact? The impact is from now prohibiting November and December? Okay. I mean, we took a look. We ran the original 1B split through the sub-ACL analysis, and I mean, generally, for the most part, there's very little impact of the splits on the sub-ACL analysis. There's some fishery impact discussion of delaying the 1B fishery until May and what the potential impacts of that are. The element that I haven't really gotten able yet to dig into are the monthly catch by area and things like that. But certainly in my glance and in the information that we have available, I mean, May to October, in years where we haven't had that sort of immediate catch in 1B, which really just happens last year and a little bit in 2011, but in years prior to that, the vast majority of the catch came from May to October with November in some years. You know, I'm looking at from 2009 forward, there's been no catch in those later months, but it's been a lot lower quota. So I just wanted to clarify the concern with the change is the months of November and December. Okay, I mean, we're talking about pretty low quota in 1B. I'd be surprised if we have quota available in November and December, but that's certainly something that we'll have to look at. I mean, based on the numbers that we just approved, 4,600, I think, in 1B, and then, you know, 95 or 92% of that, take off the research set-asides, take your overage deduction, which is almost 1,000, so you're, you know, it's a very, very small quota. But that's something that we can look at further. I just wanted to clarify that that's the concern.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a difficult issue. I'm afraid on this one I agree with Mary Beth. I want to do all I can to protect river herring, but I'm seeing merit in her point. And the way we're doing this strikes me as wrong from a procedural standpoint. So very reluctantly, I am going to oppose this motion.
Anyone else? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion to amend? Four. Opposed? Eleven opposed. Abstention? One. Recusal? One. Four. 11-1-1. The motion to amend fails. We're back on the main motion. Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Fourteen in favor. Opposed? One. Abstention? One. Recusal? One. 14. 1-1-1. Motion carries. Doug.
This one should be a little easier. Three more. Move to adopt the following specifications for 2013 to 2015 under Section 2.2.6. Domestic annual harvest is 107,800 metric tons. Domestic annual processing will be 103,800 metric tons. Domestic annual processing will be 4,000 metric tons, and U.S. at sea processing will be 0 metric tons, and these are essentially what was set up in the previous specifications.
Is there a second? Matt McKenzie? Discussion? I'm going to go to the audience first and come back. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Dave Gaethel.
Is that written right? It has domestic annual processing twice with two different numbers.
Let me go back into the document. Uh-huh. Obviously, that was a transcription error. Board of Transfer. And Board of Transfer is 4,000
metric tons. So the Board of Transfer is what? All right. I just wanted to make sure we were.
Thank you. Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? 16. Opposed? Abstention? Recusal? 1. 16-001. Doug.
Is it on now? Can you hear me now? I move to adopt Alternative 2 with Option A under Section 2.2.7 that would reduce the trigger for closing the directed herring fishery in a management area to when 92% of the sub-ACL is projected to be reached, not including the RSAs. To implement a trigger for closing the directed herring fishery in all management areas when 95% of the stock-wide ACL is projected to be reached. And finally, implement an accountability measure to require ACL, sub-ACL overage deductions based on in-season catch estimates. This would apply to both sub-ACLs and stock-wide ACLs and require a direct deduction of the overage from the ACL, sub-ACL in the following fishing year.
Is there a second? Tom Dempsey, I'm going to go to the audience. Any comments?
Jeff, are you... you? Lori.
There's an option also to consider whether or not to include a provision to allow nymphs to prohibit the possession of herring if 100% of the sub-ACL or ACL is reached. Just to throw that out there, not necessarily need that it needs to be in this motion, but it is an option for this alternative that could either be added to this motion or addressed subsequently or not addressed at all.
Let me go to the maker. Was your intent to have that in?
No, it wasn't, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Jeff, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Kalin with Lens again. I don't really see why we should go to 90. The first part of this says we're going to go to 92% of all the sub-ACLs, and they're going to close down at 92%. Is that what the motion says, Doug? And this, you're going to leave behind your language about whether there's overfishing or anything from your earlier motion, which was in the document, so that's out, I guess. That's a different alternative, yeah. I don't get why we have to do this, honestly. I mean, we've already gone to daily reporting. We've talked to the agency about the potential for them to use the hail weights to close early. I'm just afraid of leaving another 3% in the water, which, you know, the management system is pretty good at. I know we potentially could have up to 10% as you know, a rollover. And I know there's been a lot of talk about, well, if we get the rollover, you know, maybe we can close early and so forth. But are we really going to get that fish back? You know, are we really going to get the stock reopened, the area reopened to get that? I'm opposed to going anywhere from 95. We've done everything we can as an industry to go to daily reporting. We've said before we'll go to daily reporting, and the dealers, we ought to be able to do this administratively without taking fish away from us. And here we are at an opportunity. We have more fish as a result of this spec process, but to me, this just spanks us. It doesn't do anything, really, in terms of putting pressure on the agency to do their job. We've given them daily reports. Why can't we close at 95%? We've had 95% in place in this fishery for years and years and years and years. And again, now because these sub-areas are being exceeded periodically, you know, we're going to get spanked. So I'm opposed to the motion. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my understanding was that this is sort of the other side of what was, in my mind anyway, at least in my community's mind, a package to help harvest the ACL, but to stop it from getting over, and that there was sort of the rollover provision was going to get voted in, and then we were going to put in the 92% so that we sort of could narrow in on trying to get that whole ACL, and that this was a package, that they sort of both were complementary. And we've sort of passed one, and I'm just hearing that there's some opposition that I wasn't aware of. But the way we viewed it is that, like, this was just to better manage getting those quotas right, because they go over all the time, so it has to be cut back. Like, this... I mean, this happens, whatever it is, a third of the time, or depending on which area. But my understanding is that there is a tie here between going to 92% and allowing the rollover. And I know that we thought our public comment would drastically have changed on the rollover if we thought there was going to be a struggle with the going to the 92%. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Dave Gaethel.
Karen, could you scroll to the bottom bullet? Okay. I get my question, I think, is for the service on the practicality of this last bullet. In other words, the fishery runs through December 31st, and then on January 1st, you're required to take out an overage. Is that practical? I mean, we've gone in the following fishing year means the next year. It's not the year after that year. Is that correct? I just want to make sure we're not boxing ourselves into something we can't do.
Through you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and if it's all right, I We'd submitted written comments that include an answer to your question, Dave, as well as another comment. And I might, if it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, just give both comments. One is that we think there should be an interim year. That is, it would take an interim year before the accountability measure could be done. So trying to do something in the immediate year, that is, you know, as of January 1st, be able to implement is impractical. So that we would suggest that would be, as written, very impossible for us to do. So we would suggest that would not be possible for us to do. That the pound-for-pound overage deduction should be in the year following the interim year. That's different than what you have here. The other thing, as long as I've got the floor, is that we would support the 92% of the stock-wide ACL, not 95%. And that's also in the written comments. Thank you.
So I guess I would ask the maker and the seconder if they'd like to amend that last bullet based on the services comment, or if I need to do it as a motion to amend.
I'm not wed to that. I mean, one of the key things here is if we do have a deduction going in a year following, that if there is a rollover done, then that has to be done in the year following, that they have to be married up. That was one of the discussions that was put forward at the AP meeting. We can't have the rollover occurring in the subsequent year and the deduction in the following year. I think that would make things very cumbersome for the service to implement and very difficult for people to keep track of. So the only way that I'd agree to that is if there's an agreement that if we do go to a rollover provision, that would also be in the year following.
Personally, I think that would be the way to go. I am concerned with all of our AMs, that we have math mistakes, accounting errors, late reports, whatever it is, and the list is long, but we really don't know for quite a period of time exactly what we've caught. And I would hate to have an assumed overage, have to take it out based on incomplete information, and then find out 6 months or 8 months later that there was no overage and it might have even been an underage. I think it's better to have that year for everybody to, you know, get their accounting straightened out, and when people have arguments, to get them resolved. And so I would suggest that the best thing to do is to have both the overage deducted the year following the interim year and any carryover placed into the year following the interim year, so that it's all together.
That is the intention of our comments. Both would be following the interim year.
And I'm okay with it if the seconder is okay with it. So then the wording that needs to be changed to is the overage deductions is based on the year-end catch estimates, as I understand. In that motion?
Mr. Chairman, can I just suggest, I mean, this is status quo for this measure. This is the current overage deduction measure. So I would just recommend taking that whole bullet and saying status quo for overage deduction accountability measures. There's language in the framework, too, that just got approved that says sub-ACL underages would be determined based on the same methodology to determine overages. So that's already hardwired into Framework 2, that however we determine underages will be the same way we determine overages. What's being suggested by the regional office is no change. It's a status quo measure. So, I mean, I would just recommend taking this whole bullet and saying status quo for overage deduction, the overage deduction accountability measure.
I'm fine with that, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a good modification by Lori. Are you okay with that?
Both the maker and the set. Does that resolve your questions too, Dave?
I think so. I'm still, Lori, could you tell me what the no action, you know, 2 point what, so I can find it in the document and just read it to be sure?
Sure. It's the current accountability measure for overage deductions is described. It's under alternative one in the accountability measures. It's going to be page 35. I'm on the wrong section. Wait. Sorry, I can't. 27, page 27. the current accountability measures are described on page 27. So we're looking at the second one there, the AM for ACL and sub-ACL overage deduction. So what we're essentially saying is that stays the same, and we apply that same methodology for determining underages and applying carryovers.
Dave.
Sorry to be a pain, but the only change then when we vote on, if we vote on this and we vote it up, it would change from 95 to 92%. And I'm trying to carry all the numbers through the various text here. Those numbers will change in the status quo.
This alternative adjusts the management area closure AM, it changes it from 95 to 92, and it also establishes a trigger for the stock-wide ACL, which we don't have one right now. So this measure, or this motion, establishes 95% for the stock-wide ACL and adjusts the sub-ACLs from 95 to 92.
Okay. I have Mary Beth. Do you still want to make a comment?
Yeah, I guess I would not support this motion. I really don't think that we need to go to 92%. I think we need to manage the 95 as best we can. We've been discussing this issue with the agency about ways to improve the catch monitoring, and I think we need to try to get it right. The agency is discussing having a meeting with dealers and vessels on reporting, and certainly I think that is the right thing to do. But if you look at the data in the document, I really don't think it supports moving in this direction. I would not support the motion.
Tom Dempsey next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whenever we're managing these sub-ACLs, we basically have two sides of the same coin, two twin risks. One is leaving fish unutilized in the water, and the other is guarding against an overage. I think we've taken care of the first, which is by allowing for the first time, at least in recent memory, an underage rollover, to make sure that the industry doesn't leave fish in the water because of these things. Now we're circling back and saying we do have a real risk of exceeding these sub-ACLs. In fact, we have a recent track record of doing so with some regularity, right? So that's where the 92% comes in. And I think to address the fishery overall, to improve the management overall, you have to deal with both the risks of going under and the risks of going over. And I think this, partnered with our carryover provision that we've already approved, allows us to do that. So I absolutely support this motion.
John, I had you on the list, but you were taken care of.
I would say that, you know, we'd advocated 92%, not just for the sub ACLs, but for the stock-wide ACL, and you know, and I guess I'd be willing, because this motion says just for the sub ACLs, but not for the stock-wide ACLs, to to bend a little bit in the direction, you know, and okay, support this motion. You guys can bend a little bit too.
Terry Alexander.
Well, that's what I'm struggling with. I mean, we haven't gone over the total level catch in how many years, and this year here was a 3%. I realized we went over by 3%, and we want to cut the boats off 3% lower on each area because we went over 3% after how many years. I just think that's an unrealistic penalty to put on the industry when it's the first time in a long time they've done it.
Anyone else on the council? I'm going to call a question. All those in Mary Beth?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, I do think we need to look at what the problem is that we're trying to solve. And there's been a lot of references to us going over the tack repeatedly. And if you look at the information of the document, we have a 10-year span from 2003 through 2012. And in those years, you add them all up, that's 40 different area tacks. So out of the 40 different area tacks, they've been exceeded 10 times. And if you look at those numbers that have been exceeded, and you exclude those that are 5% or less, then you have 5 overages. And then when you look at those 5 overages, 2 are at 107, and 1 in 2006 for Area 1B was actually a misreporting error on the part of captains of the fishery that the Science Center discovered, and their recommendation to solve that was to change the boundary line because the captains sense that they were on George's Bank was actually correct, and that's why they reported it that way. And then we have the 2010 and 2012 overages in 1B that are significant. So what is the problem we're trying to solve? We're trying to solve the 1B problem. Well, I argued earlier for what's the method for solving it. Put enough fish in there so the agency can manage it. And out of all the years we've managed these tacks, we've only exceeded the total tack one time. And on the webpage of the agencies as of today, said was by 3%. And if you read the agency letter, it says that the guidance that we have on managing ACLs, since we're not required to do any paybacks or do anything about sub-ACLs, we have a more restrictive plan than the law requires. But the law says, or the guidance suggests, that if we exceed an ACL more than, you know, once in 4 years, you better go and look at them. Well, we haven't. We've only exceeded the total ACL once, and that's where our legal obligation goes. I'm comfortable with being more conservative in this plan and trying to manage these sub-ACLs to the number. But we have one problem here, and that's 1B. So in this specification package, we're suggesting we reduce the fish allowed, you know, in the fishery by 3%. We reduce the number of fish allowed in the fishery by an additional 3% for an RSA, and then the industry ends up with 6% less in every single area because we have a problem in 1B. Well, personally, I just think that's a little overkill. If we have a problem in 1B, if you look to option 3 in the document, you do it on a case-by-case basis. If we've got a problem with 1.3, put it to 92%. That's rational. I could support that. And I would continue to work on trying to resolve what the underlying issue is in 1B. I think that's the right way to proceed. And so if you take out the 1B problem and you look at the performance of this fishery, we would never have ever exceeded the total ACL in the fishery. And the other overages are not significant. They have no biological impact, and we're not required to actually do anything by law. So I don't really understand the motion at all. I think option 3 is really much preferred. It targets in on that issue, and you can take care of it. And I think we should take care of it. But just 3% off the top across the whole fishery? You know, and another 3% for RSA? I just don't think that's, I don't think that's fair. I really don't think that that's the direction we should be going in.
I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion to amend? Is it? No, it's not to amend. I just saw that going up there. Okay, all those in favor of the motion? One, two, 10 in favor. Opposed? 4 opposed. Abstention? Recusal. That's 10-4-1. Motion carries. Doug.
Are you ready for this? I move to submit the 2013-2015 specifications package to NIMS for approval.
Is there a second? Terry Alexander. Discussion. I'll go to the audience. Any discussion? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? Two. 14 in favor. Opposed? Abstentions? 1. Recusal? 1. 14. 0. 1. 1. Do you have any more herring business?
We're all set.
Thank you, Doug, for great committee work, and thank you, Lori, for your great staff work on this. A couple of announcements. One, I want to remind people that the NROC folks are in the Gardner Room with their maps set up for people to take a look at them. Originally, the reception for Paul was at 6:15. It has been moved up to 5:45. That's downstairs. And folks are welcome to come to it. We'll see you there and see you in the morning at 8:30.